member, the former executive member, who were in the leadership of FEDCOM. He is going to speak an oath before he speaks. Mr. Masango, I just want to caution you that taking an oath is a very serious matter, because when you take an oath, you are saying you are going to speak the truth and nothing else but the truth. Therefore, as the community of South Africa and this portfolio committee, that's the only thing that we are expecting from you, the truth and nothing else but the truth. Honorable members, today we were expecting Mr. Masango and Ms. Dudumieni, the former chairperson of SAA. I am not sure of his current role, what is she doing now, but we were expecting her today. She is not coming today. I know, members, that you would want to say something about that, but let me explain first. Thank you very much, members. She has exchanged, we wrote her a letter in inviting her to this inquiry. She did respond to the letter by writing SMSs and kept on exchanging SMSs with the secretary of the committee. She did not write anything. She is saying in one of the SMSs that her lawyer was not around and her lawyer had never had an interest on looking on the inquiry because maybe there was nothing that she would interest him really or her. She then was waiting for maybe to be guided by her lawyer on how to respond to the letter of Parliament, coming from Parliament. The lawyer arrived yesterday. So it's only from yesterday that the lawyer became aware that she had to come. She has to come to the inquiry. They will look at the legalities of coming to the inquiry. And then she will therefore revert back to us by writing a letter when they have done their work with her lawyers. Then he apologized in the SMS for being unavailable up to now. We have an SMS, we don't have a formal letter. Parliament has written a formal letter to her in inviting her, and we did not invite her yesterday or a day before yesterday. We have given her enough time to respond to the letter. That's the situation with Ms. Dudumieni. Honorable Swart, Honorable Singh, Honorable Mazon.
We've got another example here.
Honorable Luyen.
Sorry. We've got another example here of a witness who was in your, what you've just told us, given due notice to be here. And we have a tight schedule. And so I don't accept that explanation. It's very clear that there are delaying tactics being played yet again. And I would suggest that we issue a subpoena the summons in terms of the act that we're entitled to ensure there are some very serious allegations that Ms. Needs to answer to, Ms. Mayeni needs to answer to, and we cannot, our inquiry is coming to an end, and we cannot delay it without getting to hear her evidence. But I would also add that we need also, there are a number of witnesses that are on our schedule, and we need to be aware that this might be the same tactic that might be used with others as well. And so we need to be mindful of that. It's unacceptable that on the day of the inquiry that witnesses are telling us they need more time or whatever. And we saw that with Mr. Anuj Singh. We need to treat this witness as similarly as others who have sought to delay our process and undermine our process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm not a lawyer. I did study some law subjects, but I would think that it's what has happened is part of administrative justice. And for now, we'll have to accept the reasons that were given to us. But having said that, I appreciate that we have time frames, and I think our legal advisors, together with yourself, should write a letter to indicate that she has to appear before the committee next week, and let us know by Friday whether that is possible. Alternatively, summons can be issued for her to appear either on Tuesday or Wednesday. That's how I think we should approach it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, Mr. Singh is far more diplomatic than I. I would request that we immediately issue summons. You are given an opportunity in this committee to come and appear before us voluntarily, and people do know, unless you live in a complete bubble of denial. Everyone knows what this committee is doing, and to say that your lawyer hasn't been following the committee, you know, that's just not an acceptable excuse. Chair, I've been on this committee for, as you know, a very, very long time, and this is the typical modus operandi of the particular individual in question. Chair, everyone that's come here voluntarily has shown bona fide in coming here and doing so. Those that we've had to summons, we all know the result thereof and why it's happened. Chair, this committee is not in the interest of Parliament. It is in the interest of South Africa. And when we ask people to come and testify here, we're asking them to do their country duty. And it is most unfortunate that we have to summon someone to come and do their country duty. But, you know, given the fact that obviously someone's playing, a little game over here, let us not play that game. If we want things done legally, as per Ms. Dudumayeni's request, then let's do it completely legally and let's summons her to appear before the committee.
No, thanks, Chair. I fully concur with the view of Mr. Singh, because we must be fair and square in the execution of our duty, and we must make sure that at the same time that our time for us to conclude this process is not affected by excuses that are not understandable, but give one a benefit of doubt for the first time. So it is quite appropriate for us to make sure that a letter is issued to Ms. Mayeni that she must appear before Wednesday next week, failing which we issue summons. I think that will be on a fairly and squarely basis operation. Mr. Singh has issued.
Thank you very much, honourable members. We will look at your submissions or at what you have, the advice that you have given us, and we would discuss with advocates and the legal team what is the best way to respond to her. Thank you very much for your contribution. Honourable members, we then have only one witness for today. I wish to bring to your attention that we need, after engaging with Mr. Masango, we will need to stay for 15 minutes. Please, I beg for your indulgence. We need to stay for 15 minutes. There's an issue around the minister, the former Minister of Public Enterprises, who is the Minister of Home Affairs today, which we need to discuss as a committee and his invitation. We invited, remember, we invited him also to come to the committee next week, ne? To come and see us next week. We need to speed up the process, because by the end of March, we need to at least to have a concrete resolution on wrapping up this work that we are doing. Thank you, honorable members. I will now read the oath to Mr. Masango, and then we will continue with our work. Mr. Masango, I'm going to read an oath. I take it you've got the two-pager in front of you. Okay. Thank you. In accordance with Section 16 of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislature Act 2004, as a witness to this oversight inquiry, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages, you are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath before a House or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in this proceeding. Please be aware that in terms of Section 17(2) of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislature Act, a person who willfully furnishes a house or committee with information or makes a statement before it which is false or misleading commits an offence and is liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years. You are then required to take the oath. Please bring the mic next. Push it to you.
Thank you, Chair. I swear that the evidence I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God.
Thank you very much, Mr. Masango. Before you present to us your submission, I just want to alert the media people that information brought to the committee should be used in the committee. After it is used in the committee, then it becomes a public document that can be used anywhere. We are not being selfish by not giving you, according to the rule of Parliament, we are not selfish in not giving you the information before time. You'll have to wait for us to be in a committee, and then in session, then you get the information. I don't want to disrupt the relationship that we have built with you, but you also need to be patient with the committee so that we can work together. Thank you very much. I will now give over to the evidence leader and see if there is anything that you need to say before Mr. Masango. You don't have anything. Okay. Then thank you very much. You can then present.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the committee. Thank you for the opportunity and the invitation. Chair, I'm going to present what I've submitted. And in my submission, there's annexures. I'm not going to go through the annexures, just a high-level summary and explain to the committee what I know. and what I've been exposed to. Thank you, Chair. Chair, as a form of introduction, I have been requested by the Acting Chairperson of the Parliamentary Committee on Public Enterprise to give evidence before the Portfolio Committee to assist in the inquiry into governance, procurement, and financial sustainability of ESCOM. The Portfolio Committee has requested that I attend as a witness to assist in identifying the challenges currently facing ESCOM. I have been advised that I was mentioning the evidence given by Mr. Machela Koko and Mr. Arnold before the Portfolio Committee in January 2018. I have not had the access to the transcript, neither the audio recordings of the evidence given by Mr. Singh or Mr. Koko. The Portfolio Committee has reason to believe that I will also be able to assist with certain events which led to the suspension of five ESCOM executives. I pointed out that I'm only aware of four executives that were suspended and not five, as set out in the invitation to me from the Portfolio Committee dated 21 February 2018. Even though I have only been requested to provide the Portfolio Committee with limited information, it is prudent that I set out salient issues which must be brought to the attention of the Portfolio Committee. Chair, the topics which will be addressed in this submission are the following: my background, the intimidatory tactics, my suspension from ESCOM, the whistleblower report, Mr. Koko's disciplinary proceeding, as well as the meeting that took place in March 2015 at Melrose Arch. Chair, I began my career at ESCOM approximately 20 years ago as a senior technician. I hold a national diploma, national high diploma, and master's in project management. I was the project director for the Gusile project for approximately 8 years before being promoted to the position of the group executive at ESCOM during 2015 August. During my tenure at ESCOM, I successfully managed many projects for the financial benefit of ESCOM. Given my successful career and many achievements in significant projects at ESCOM, I can demonstrate that I have the requisite experience, knowledge, unquestionable commitment and integrity to add value as a key role player and executive member of the board. I do not hesitate, Chair, to state that I have an impeccable good name and reputation, and my successful tenure at ESCOM cannot be disputed. I assisted growing and benefiting the power utility. I will willingly expand on my successful projects should it be necessary. In as far as intimidatory tactics, Chair, I need to state that during the early part of 2017, I was seconded to the office of the Interim Chief Executive Officer, who at the time was Mr. Koko, to assist the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Singh. One of the main reasons for my secondment was to assist Mr. Singh and Mr. Koko in terms of the design to cost structure at ESCOM, which aim at optimizing the finance structure across the business of the power utility and to assist in improving the implementation of ESCOM's corporate structure. Prior to my transfer to the Office of the Interim Chief Executive Officer during February 2017, Mr. Singh persisted in requesting that I go on forced study leave to Harvard University in the United States of America, which I also declined. Mr. Singh advised that he was mandated by Mr. Koko to represent him in enforcing my immediate leave. I was advised by Mr. Singh that even though the Harvard study course was commencing in April 2017, I was requested to take the immediate leave for the entire month of March 2017 prior to proceeding to Harvard. The reason for my requested departure, as informed by Mr. Singh, was to ease the political tension which was brought about due to the turmoil that reigned in ESCOM, in particular relating to governance structures. I believe that the real motivation behind my requested departure was to conveniently sidetrack me at the relevant time as I was internal candidate for the position that was advertised for the COO at the time. These events arose because, in my view, I provided information of wrongdoing at Eskom, the particularity of which I deal with below. During a meeting with Mr. Singh, I advised him that I was not going to be intimidated and I would not go on forced leave to attend Harvard. During discussion with Mr. Singh, he threatened that Mr. Gogo would have me suspended as he did not want my presence within Eskom for the reason advanced herein. I was advised by Mr. Singh that Mr. Prish Govender would replace me and occupy the position of acting group executive of Group Capital when I go on study leave. It is interesting that my replacement had already been selected even though I had not agreed to go to Harvard School. Chair, in terms of my suspension, on the 3rd of November 2017, I received a letter by email in terms of which Eskom temporarily suspended me from work with immediate effect. A copy of the email annexed Chair Mark A. The suspension letter recorded that I may have committed serious misconduct relating to inter alia undeclared conflict of interest and generally corrupt conduct. These are vague and unsubstantiated allegations which I deny in the strongest terms. No particularity has been furnished to me in relation to my alleged wrongful conduct. I requested that my suspension be withdrawn. I have no doubt the reason for my suspension was an attempt to silence me, discredit me and undermine my credibility as a potential witness at Mr. Gogo's disciplinary hearing. Chair, I must indicate to you that this morning my legal representative indicated last evening he received some information around my suspension from ESCOM, which I did not consider. They were only sent yesterday evening. I have challenged my suspension and annexed a copy of the response addressed by my attorneys dated 7 November 2017, marked Annexure B. Approximately 4 months later, I'm still on suspension. I have unequivocally expressed my desire to return to my employer at Eskom. It goes without saying that my extensive knowledge and experience can only add value to the power utility at a time when it is in a major crisis. When the new leadership came into the office, I tendered my cooperation to the new chairman and the acting chief executive officer, demonstrating my commitment to the ESCOM. That is to mean, Chair, that when the new board came in place, I also wrote to them. Whistleblower reports. It is now common knowledge, Chair, that I'm the one that submitted the whistleblower report, which was prepared in February 2017. At the time, I became very concerned regarding issues pertaining to the maladministration and corruption at Eskom, in particular relating to some of the executives. Having been part of the organization for more than 2 decades, I decided to escalate my concern to the chairman at the time, Dr. Ben Ngubane. I requested a meeting. I met with Dr. Ngubane to raise my concern, particularly regarding Mr. Gogo's conduct. Dr. Ngubane requested that I prepare a written report addressing the allegations of corruption, lack of corporate governance, instability in management, and gross mismanagement. I advised Dr. Ngubane that if no steps were taken to address the raised concerns at Eskom, the power utility will eventually collapse. I compiled a report which was dated 1st March 2017, and has subsequently become known as a whistleblower report. This document, Chair, was marked private and confidential and was only intended for the attention of Dr. Ngubane. A copy of the whistleblower's report is annexed here, marked C. I prepared the whistleblower's report not knowing that my fate would be sealed, my credibility and integrity challenged, my employment jeopardized, and my safety and security compromise. Needless to say, the whistleblower report was fundamental to the investigation into the corruption and fraud at Eskom. The whistleblower's report dealt with the following matters concerning Mr. Koko. 1. Undermining the authority of other executives at ESCOM, in particular, that without the necessary authority. He issued instruction that a project manager for a consultant's company at Kusile Power Station should be removed from the project, which was suspicious. He also removed a GTC company from Kusile without any reason, therefore. He conspired to remove Mr. Franz Tlakudi, a senior manager at the Kusile Power Station, over whom he had no authority and without providing any reason. A separation of politics and professionalism. On that point, Chair, Mr. Koko will treat employees differently if he believed that they had a different political agenda to him. Undermining the governance and subcommittee. In that point, Chair, Mr. Koko did not adhere to the governance of ESCOM. He was appointed as a member of ESCOM Executive Operations Committees, which committee would make recommendation to the board. He failed to attend various committees meeting, which he was obliged to. That committee normally chairs it before the board tender committee. In terms of the militarization of ESCOM, Mr. Koko instructed General Martin to transfer certain employees from one division to another. I had refused to transfer these employees as there were no valid reason to do so. The last issue, Chair, was that the process was probably not followed. Mr. Koko would not follow the proper processes within ESCOM, such as engaging with the Human Resource Department when employees were dismissed by him. In March 2017, Dr. Ngubane called a special board meeting at which the whistleblower report was tabled, even though I had provided it to him on a confidential basis, given my very serious concern regarding some of the executives. I believe that the whistleblower's report precipitated Mr. Koko's suspension. I understand that the board members had a meeting that same day, even to implement the decision to suspend Mr. Koko. I subsequently learned that the decision to suspend him was revoked following a sudden intervention that evening by the Minister of Public Enterprise, Ms. Lynn Brown. There was no reason why the minister should have intervened to protect Mr. Koko, particularly given the serious allegations against him. Within days following the board meeting, Dr. Ngubane scheduled a meeting at his office between Mr. Koko and myself and advised us both that we should work together in an attempt to resolve the issues which I believe related to the content of the whistleblower's report. At that meeting, following what was conveyed by Dr. Ngubane, it was apparent to me that he had informed Mr. Koko that I was the whistleblower, therefore compromising my position and my safety. My suspicions were realized when Mr. Koko went so far as to utter words, if you start a fight, you must win it, which I perceive as a threat. Mr. Koko requested that I terminate Mr. Franz Tolle's employment, who was at the time the project manager at Kusile and my subordinate. I requested reason for such harsh action, but Mr. Koko was unable to provide any reason. Mr. Koko was attempting to sabotage my position, in particular with the synchronization of Kusile Unit 1 and the commercialization of Ingula Unit 3. Should the portfolio committee require further information in this regard, I'm willing to expand on that. In May 2017, Brian Mulife was reappointed to the position of the Chief Executive Officer of ESCOM, at which time Mr. Koko went on special leave, which subsequently culminated in his suspension whilst an investigation was undertaken. Mr. Koko was aware that he was being investigated as a result of not only the whistleblower's report, but also media reports that had alleged that he had failed to disclose a conflict of interest in respect of the Impulse International Company, a subcontractor which rendered services to ESCOM. Chair, it is a public knowledge that Impulse is a company in which Mr. Koko's stepdaughter, Ms. Chomo, was a shareholder and a director thereof. Impulse was awarded approximately 10 contracts by ESCOM, which contract values aggregated in the amount of approximately 390 million rands. Within 2 weeks of his appointment, Mr. Mlifo was removed from his position as the Group Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Johnny Dada was then appointed as an interim Group Chief Executive Officer. At the end of March 2017, Clive Dagger, Wharf Mayor Attorneys, had been instructed by the ESCOM board to conduct a forensic and legal investigation arising from the whistleblower report and various articles that had been published in the media concerning the potential conflict of interest relating to Mr. Gogo and Impulse. The objective of the investigation was to ascertain whether the aforesaid allegation could be corroborated. In April 2017, Clive Dagger, Wharf Mayor, on the instruction of the ESCOM board, appointed Nkongi Incorporated, an auditing firm, to conduct a forensic investigation concerning the potential conflict of interest relating to Mr. Gogo and his stepdaughter. Various consultations were conducted with a number of ESCOM employees, including myself. I fully cooperated with the investigation. On 28 July 2017, Clive Dagger, Wharf Mayor, submitted its final report, which is annexed here to Mark D. To avoid proximity, the exhibits are not attached but can be made available should the portfolio committee require them. The outcome of the Clive Dagger, Wharf Mayor report was that the disciplinary proceedings should be instituted against Mr. Gogo. On the 1st of August 2017, Mr. Gogo was suspended pending the finalization of the disciplinary proceedings against him. Chair, in terms of Machela Gogo's disciplinary proceeding, my relationship, Chair, with Gogo was a good one until 2016. However, our relation became strained when I started becoming aware of his unprofessional conduct. The disciplinary proceedings shared by Advocate Ntombeni against Mr. Gogo commenced on the 18th of October 2017. Advocate S. Mosaung was appointed as the evidence leader. I believe that the proceedings were marked by irregular interferences by Mr. Zetembe, who was the acting chairman at the time, which culminated in the charges against Mr. Gogo being amended and reduced from 10 charges to 6 charges, watered down charges. I was concerned about the disciplinary proceedings and the manner in which the evidence leader at the time, namely Advocate Mosaung, was dealing with the disciplinary process. I approached the Human Resource Director, Ms. Elsie Pule, Mr. Peter Sebula, the General Manager, and Sean Maris, the then Acting Chief Executive, to again raise my concern. On the 3rd of November 2017, Chair, I was scheduled to meet with the newly appointed evidence leader, Advocate Musa. Earlier that day, I had a meeting with Ms. Pule, who's the HR Director, Wawa Kaluba, who was the Acting Senior General Manager for Legal and Compliance, and Mr. Norman Masingita, who's the Industrial Relationship Practitioner, where I raised 5 serious issues concerning Mr. Gogo's disciplinary hearings. My concern was that, one, the charge sheet against Mr. Gogo was reduced from 10 to 6 charges without any reasons, without any reasonable explanation thereof. Two, the witnesses who could and ought to have added value to the hearing were not requested to give evidence at the disciplinary hearing. Three, as resolved by EXCO, a senior counsel was supposed to have been appointed as an evidence leader from the commencement of the disciplinary hearing. This decision was ignored and the junior counsel was appointed. Four, Mr. Gogo ought to have been charged for his involvement in the Chilean issue, in the Tegeta issue, that have resulted in a significant financial and reputational damage to ESCOM. Regrettably, the aforesaid issues were not addressed as part of the charges against Mr. Gogo. And lastly, Mr. Tlaudi, who was supposed to be the witness, had informed me that he had received threatening messages directly from Mr. Gogo in an attempt to intimidate him for giving evidence at the hearing. As a result thereof, Mr. Tlaudi did not testify at the proceedings and resigned from his employer at ESCOM. It appears that none of the concerns raised by me were dealt with by the senior executive. On the same day that I raised my concern as referred to above, namely 3 November 2017, I was suddenly and suspiciously and without any legitimate reason temporarily suspended with immediate effect. To demonstrate my willingness to cooperate, notwithstanding my suspension, I met with Advocate Musa on the 20th of November 2017. I, however, subsequently decided not to be a witness at Mr. Koko's disciplinary hearing, as it was clearly shame hearing with a predetermined outcome. In addition, I had concerns about my safety. On the 23rd of November 2017, when Mr. Koko's disciplinary hearing convened, an affidavit conveniently dated 21 November 2017 deposited by Mr. Dubazan was circulated to the media by Advocate Lawrence, Koko's legal representative. A copy of this affidavit is annexed here to marked E. Over and above what was orchestrated as a maneuver by Mr. Koko to divert attention from disciplinary hearing, it was also very unusual, to say the least, for legal counsel to act in this manner. The affidavit contains a serious allegations of purported wrongdoing by me and various other persons, including Mr. Mzilikazi, Mr. Thakudi, a well-known journalist for Sunday Times, Peter Sibula, as well as Colin Maini. The allegations are prosperous and far-fetched that Mr. Dubazan had now conveniently withdrawn his complaint. The allegations are false, vexatious, defamatory, and void of truth and substance, which allegations I vehemently deny. I have entrusted my legal representative chair to institute both criminal and civil proceedings against not only Mr. Dubazan, whom I have never met, but also against Mr. Koko. I understand that Mr. Mzilikazi wa Africa is also pursuing legal proceedings against Mr. Dubazan, who has committed perjury and obstructing the course of justice. The irresistible inference to be drawn from the vexatious allegations and the fact that the affidavit was published and disseminated is that its intent purpose was to defame me, undermine my credibility, tarnish my reputation and good name in circumstances where I was a potential witness at Mr. Koko's disciplinary proceeding. Mr. Koko took every possible step to manipulate the proceeding, thereafter witnesses and divert by employing tactics to create a ruse. Not surprisingly, on the 15 December 2017, Mr. Koko was found not guilty on all six reduced charges and was subsequently reinstated in his position as ESCOM head of generation. After Mr. Koko's reinstatement in January 2018, he was suspended once again and new charges were laid against him. On 16 February, Mr. Koko resigned from his position as ESCOM's head generation prior to a new disciplinary hearing being convened. Chair, on this point, it was that coincidence, the issues that I raised with the HR director that needed to be looked at on the second disciplinary hearing, those charges were then put. On the 23rd January 2017, Mr. Koko was called as a witness in the ESCOM parliamentary inquiry. I understand that during the evidence under oath, he referred to me and suggested that I had received bribes and that criminal charges had been laid against me. Chair, I am unaware of such charges, and note that Mr. Koko was unable to answer the direct question seeking the particulars of the relevant police station and the case number of the alleged complaint. Chair, one of the requests is the issue of the Millrose Act that I was requested to let the committee what I know. Chair, I have been requested by this committee to provide this information relating to a meeting which convened at Melrose Arc during March 2015 while I was a project director at Kusile Power Station. During this time, Mr. Dan Marugana was the group executive for Group Capital and was my supervisor, to whom I reported to. During the week of the 11th March 2015, I cannot recall the exact date, I attended a meeting at Megawatt Park where I was giving a presentation. Mr. Marogana at the time was on annual leave during this time, and Mr. Gogo stood in his place. In other words, he was standing in for Dan Marogana. After the meeting at Megawatt Park, I proceeded to leave and was on road back to the Gusile power station when I received a call from Mr. Koko. I had advised Mr. Koko that I was returning to the power station when he instructed me to turn back and attend a meeting at Melrose Arch. I had never been to Melrose Arch before, and Mr. Koko provided directions. As he was my superior, I did not question his request, as it was not unusual for him to request my attendance at meetings. When I arrived at Melrose Arch, as per the direction given by Mr. Koko, I was still unaware where the meeting was to take place when I arrived. When I arrived, I could see Mr. Koko standing on the balcony, and I proceeded to take the stairs to meet him. I am unable to identify the location, neither the name of the building. When I met Mr. Koko, he immediately requested that I hand over my cell phone to him, which made me uncomfortable. I could not identify the company as there was no name at the entrance. I was then taken to a small office where I was introduced to Mr. Salim Issa, and he was advised by Mr. Koko that I was the project director of Gusile Power Station. The meeting did not last for more than 10 minutes, Chair. At this meeting and in front of Mr. Issa, Mr. Koko then said the following, which I recall very clearly. He says, Maki, we are going to be suspended tomorrow. I responded by asking, suspended for what? Mr. Koko then explained to me that there were four ESCOM executives that were going to be suspended, namely Dan Marogana, Sediso Matuna, Sulufelo Molife, and himself, that is Mr. Koko. Thereafter, Mr. Koko made a comment that the three executives will not return to their employee at ESCOM after being suspended. However, he confidently remarked that he will be returning to the same position. I inquired from Mr. Koko on what basis the executive could be suspended and what the reason for their suspension was. Mr. Koko made a comment to Mr. Issa that I have the potential to fulfill the role of the acting chief executive officer, a comment which left me confused. I did not know Mr. Issa's role or position at the time, neither the reason why the meeting was taking place at this location. Mr. Issa made the following remark to me when I was about to leave. He says, Abraham, you are messing up ESCOM on contracts management. You guys must sort out the claims with these contractors. I interpreted that comment to be positive, in particular in regard to resolving some of the ESCOM challenges. I was mistaken, as I believe that Mr. Issa had a genuine interest in ESCOM. The reason, Chair, I took that comment as positive was because at the time, you'll recall that both Medupi Gusile, we had claims that were exceeding the project value amount. So in other words, at Gusile, the project value was 160 billion, but we had more than 100 billion claims. And at Medupi, the project value was 135 billion, and we had the claims that were exceeding that 135 billion. So the comment to me at the time, I saw it as positive because it was a public knowledge that the cost escalation in these projects were very alarming. And then, Chair, the meeting ended there. I left the meeting very confused about the suspension, and I attempted to contact Mr. Marogana, who was my supervisor, but he was unavailable to pick up my call. I then called my finance manager, whom I worked with at Gusile. I have always maintained a good relationship with my finance manager. As a result of my concern arising from the meeting, I feared for my safety and informed Ms. Cry, who was the finance manager, that if anything had to happen to me, she should know the reasons. It was important for me to meet with her and explain the events of the aforementioned meeting, because at the time I couldn't locate Mr. Marukan, who was my supervisor. Thereafter, Mr. Marogana returned my call and agreed to meet with me. The same day that I had arranged to meet Mr. Marogana, I am unsure of the exact date, I received a request to meet with the chairman, Mr. Zola Tsotsi. At the meeting with the chairman, that is Zola Tsotsi, Mr. Edwin Mabelani, who was the chief procurement manager, and Ms. Nonkululeko Gevereleti, a senior general manager, were also present. At this meeting, we were advised by Mr. Tsotsi that four ESCOM executives were suspended with immediate effect, and these were the same four executives mentioned by Mr. Koko at the Millrose Act. Chair, in conclusion, I have set out the issues which, in my view, should be brought to the attention of the Portfolio Committee. I have always been opposed to any form of nepotism, the flouting of good corporate governance, mismanagement, abuse of power and disregard of the Public Finance Management Act and the Constitution of South Africa. Chair, I believe that the inquiry by the Portfolio Committee will establish the facts pertaining to the corruption and mismanagement at ESCOM. ESCOM, which is one of the largest utilities in the world, should be restored to what it once was. Thank you, Chair, and the committee. I would like to stop there, Chair, in terms of my summarized submission.
Thank you very much, Mr. Masango, for the presentation you gave us. I will now give over to the evidence leader to lead the questions. Thereafter, you will interact with the members of the Portfolio Committee. They will have questions that you'll have to answer to them. Thank you very much. Advocate.
Thanks, Chair. I'm sorry to be a nuisance, but I would kindly require just 5 minutes to answer to the call of nature.
Thank you very much. We will just have a 5 minutes break so that everybody responds to what advocate has said. Mr. Masango, as you are going out, you are not allowed to interact with anyone except the call of nature.
Thank you. joking, I'll take a message.
This is over. Can we get settled? I will now give over to the evidence leader to lead us.
Mr. Masango, you are aware that Mr. Koko has since left the employ of ESCOM, and that absent the contractual or the employment contract between him and ESCOM, ESCOM would not be able to take any disciplinary action against him. Is that your understanding as well?
Yes.
However, that does not stop any criminal prosecution being pursued against him, should there be basis for such criminal prosecutions. Is that your understanding as well?
Correct.
So my questions are aimed at soliciting a response in the event that this committee were to make a recommendation that certain criminal prosecutions be pursued against Mr. Koko and Barrett. Let's start at the meeting at Melrose Arc. You, referring to Mr. Koko giving you directions to Melrose Arc because you've never been there before, how were these directions given to you? Were they verbal or were they sent through the phone?
Through you, Chair, the directions were verbal. He was directing me how I should go there. The good thing is that as well, that day I was with my driver, as he was directing us which direction and where, and it took some time for us to get there because I was not familiar with the place.
So, who was your driver? The details of your driver.
The driver that took me there was Usiso Ntuli, the guy that was working with me at Busile.
This Mr. Sibusiso Ntuli, was he also an ESCOM employee, or was it your private driver?
He was an ESCOM employee, but working through a contract. He was subcontracted, but he was working for ESCOM.
Should we require more information in terms of locating him? Would you be in a position to assist us or the law enforcement agencies to locate Mr. Ntuli?
Yes, Advocate, I still have contact for Usiso Ntuli. I can assist. And I think he's still working there at Usile, if I'm not mistaken.
And when you get to the venue, did Mr. Ntuli stay behind or did he join the meeting?
He stayed in the car. He did not join the meeting.
My understanding is that you were going back to Witbank at the time you received the call and you had to come back to Melrose Arch.
Correct.
Did you communicate to your driver? You must have communicated to him to go back to Melrose Arch, but did you give or did you share with him reasons why you were going back to Melrose Arch?
Yes, I did tell him that we're no longer going to Busile. We must turn back and go to another meeting at Melrose Arch. But I don't know the direction. I will give you the direction as I get it.
Did you tell him who you were meeting at Melrose Arch?
Yes, I did, that I'm going to meet Mr. Koko, which my driver knew Mr. Koko.
In paragraph 7.2, page 16 of your submission, you say, during the week of 11 March 2015, then you open brackets, I cannot recall the exact date, close bracket. That's a bit confusing. Is it the exact time that you cannot recall, or is it the exact date?
Advocate, I think the date, the 11 March date is correct. As I was trying to work it back, as you know, trying to put the sequence of events, and the 11 date, if I remember very well, it was Wednesday of that week, because that meeting happened on Wednesday. I remember then there was Thursday, there was the following meeting by Mr. Tosi, and then there was a Friday on it. So I put 11 March 2015, and I say I cannot recall exactly, but I think it's the most appropriate date if I go back and try to remember the sequences.
Now that you've explained Mr. Koko's, or what Mr. Koko told you about the suspensions of the three executives, including himself, you were confused later on by this discussion, but there were subsequent developments that happened. Indeed, the executives were suspended, four of them. Indeed, Mr. Koko is the only one who comes back, as earlier indicated in your meeting at Melrose Arch. We know there was a meeting in Durban where the suspensions of this executive was finalized to be executed by the board. In light of all of these facts, what do you make of Mr. Koko's involvement in this entire suspension of these executives?
Advocate, I must say that in my mind, until all the information was on the table, it was always difficult to connect the dots. But I was always very suspicious, like I indicated earlier, on the when you go there, the treatment that you received. During the time those four executives were suspended, what amazed me was that there were a lot of meetings that Koko was calling. And I was also called into those meetings during the suspension, but I never attended those meetings. And then I think that's where, like I indicated earlier on, that initially I had a very good relationship, but I started to be suspicious as we carried on, and then I started to be careful not to expose myself. But after everything was put on the table, and then I started to connect all the dots, and I never went and analyzed why Mr. Issa was in the meeting and all that, because me and Koko were also very close. I trusted what he was doing. But as time goes on, I started to realize that it seems as if something is not usual.
I've given you the, I understand you and your own suspicions, but there's now facts, there's evidence of what you just testified on. To that, I've added more information that there was a meeting at Durban, at the former president's residence, where the discussion or the conceptualization of the suspension of these executives came about to be executed through the board. What do you make of Mr. Koko's involvement in all of that?
Through you, Chair, the conclusion that I draw was that Mr. Koko is the runner or is working for somebody. And I'll qualify that, Chair, by saying that me being the executive in Eskom, I did not only report what is on a whistleblower report to Dr. Ngubane. There were a lot of other discussions that were going on. But within Eskom, then I started to realize that it seems as if there's a certain system, and that system is that if you go and report to the board or board members, you're reporting to the same person. If you go and report to the ministry, you're reporting to the same person, and that became a very big concern. So if I were to conclude the response to the question, is that you could see that while Koko was doing some of this thing, you could see that he's probably receiving some instruction that he has to execute, and which was a problem. But I must also indicate that there was a certain time as well where I wanted to resign in Eskom, because I was one of the person that would always, you know, want to follow the process and question some of the things. But in Eskom, there are good people who said, you don't have to go, we see what's happening, but we'll see how we fight it.
Did Mr. Koko tell you at Maru's Ark that you were to be one of the people that were going to act in the stead of those executives that were to be suspended?
Yes, he did indicate in front of ISA to say you are the potential guy who might be requested to come and help.
But did he specify the position in which you were to act or not? Or was that just that bold, broad statement he made?
He gave a very broad statement. That's why in my submission you could see that he says you've got the potential to act as a chief executive officer, which surprised me. But I must also indicate that at that meeting, I have not seen him nervous as he was. At that time, I could see that he's not the person that I know. And I assume that suspending four executives in a big company like Eskom without giving the reasons, it was, I think, at the time I thought that there's something big going on. Because I kept on asking the very same question to say, but what are the reasons? It can be. And we left it there, couldn't get the answers.
Ms. Cry, did you eventually meet with her?
Yes, it's correct. The same day. When I left there, after I did not get hold of Mr. Marogana, Ms. Cry is the next person that I called.
You meet Ms. Cry, what do you tell her?
I explained what I've encountered, that I was called to a meeting. They took my phone, and this is what it was said in a meeting. And through you, Chair, you will understand that you go to the meeting, they take the phone, and they drop that bombshell. And it was, for me, very concerning. And I started to get very, very worried. And I felt that, you know, I need to confide to somebody. And what came to mind was that I need to get Dan Marogana first and ask him whether he is aware of this. Things that are being said, and I couldn't get hold of him, then I reverted to try and get hold of Ms. Cry.
Then Marogana returns the call. What then happens in that telephonic discussion?
The following day, we were supposed to have a meeting with Mr. Marogana, because at the time we established a claims committee that was looking at the claims from head office that was supporting us in different projects. So in the telephone we agreed that we will meet the following day, myself and Mr. Marogana. The following day is not in a meeting. The meeting that Mr. Marogana was supposed to share is not in that meeting. And us as his subordinates, we asked one guy to chair the meeting because we called him, the guy that chaired the meeting called him, he says we must carry on with the meeting. But the very same day, which was the following day, which was Thursday, then I managed to secure a meeting with Mr. Marogan on the coming Saturday.
So you met him after he was suspended already or before his suspension?
After he was suspended, because the suspensions were officially confirmed by Mr. Zola Tsotsi when he called me the following meeting and the other two colleagues. And then I met them Saturday.
Why did Mr. Tsotsi call yourself and the others that you mentioned?
At the time, I did not know why he was calling, but that Thursday when I woke up, I realized that somebody's been calling me. When I checked the number, it was the secretariat, company secretariat. But when I look at the phone, I realized that he dropped the message that says, 8 o'clock, the chairman wants to meet you. And then when I went to Megawatt Park, finished the claims meeting that the guys were arranged, I left actually that meeting while it was continuing. I went to the chairman's office. The chairman did not meet me alone. When I got to the to the office chairperson, I found Edwin Mabelane and Ms. Nkululeko Veledi waiting, and I greeted them. While we were there, then the company secretary came and called us. He called us, three of us, not into the chairman's office, to a boardroom. Then we followed him to the boardroom. When we got to the boardroom, we did not find the chairman only. We found the other board members, and then the chairman says, listen, we have suspended four executives today. We want you guys to help us. And then he says, September, because I would be acting CEO. And then he says, Mr. Mabelane, can you help us in generation, because Coco is also suspended. And then he asks Nkululeko Veledi to say, can you act as the finance director, because Tool is also suspended. And then he asks me whether can I act in Dan's place as a group executive for Group Capital. We all agreed. And then subsequent to that, that meeting did not also last 10 minutes. He says, let's go to the media. In other words, there was already some arrangement, meetings were happening. Then there we go, follow them to the media, then he addressed the media.
Chair, with your permission, I just want to remind the committee about the testimony of Mr. Tsotsi. Mr. Tsotsi testified that what shocked him the most after the executives were suspended was how quickly a list of officials who were to act in the stead of those that had been suspended. So whilst Mr. Tsotsi might have been in his capacity as the chair of the board to communicate to you that you were requested to act in the stead of the suspended officials, he had no idea how your names came up to act in those positions. You want to comment on that?
I don't have any comment on that, but the events unfolded as I've explained.
Let's go back to your whistleblower's report on page 6. Paragraph 5. We have had an opportunity to play a recordal of a meeting wherein this whistleblower's report was tabled and discussed at a board, special board meeting. And a decision was taken that later on the day, the 2nd of March, 2017, Mr. Coco was to be afforded an opportunity by the board to address it on why he wouldn't be suspended on that day. And we know that meeting did take place. We know now that Mr. Coco was not suspended. You are testifying here that, I want to get to, in your report you had made very serious allegations of a number of things that were not going right at ESCOM. The board had an opportunity to discuss those issues. And the board, in its wisdom, had taken a decision. But that decision the board never communicated to Mr. Coco. In light of the seriousness of the allegations, in light of the board's own admission of its intolerance of that conduct, what do you make of the boards, of those directors, fiduciary duties? Did they discharge their fiduciary duties?
Through you, Chair, I don't think that they've discharged them. And I think it suffices to say, Advocate, that before they received your report, when I met Dr. Ngubane, I explained to Dr. Ngubane my observations, and I requested Dr. Ngubane to engage other executives in the committee so that he can understand what I'm trying to articulate to him. And when he asked me to write a report, I told him that I'm only going to write a report that pertaining to what is in my division. The other things that are happening in other divisions, ask the other executives to give you that information. And through you, Chair, the meeting that took place, that is a known issue that the meeting took place and they did not execute their decision. I knew about that meeting later, and I think it's important that I explain to the committee how I knew about it. At the time, I was convinced that the board that was there is really not helping the organization to sort out the problems. And I came across Kulane Ntoma, who he said, I must go back and talk to the chairman, which was Dr. Ngubane. I refused. I said, I'm not going to talk to Dr. Ngubane because he's in the same club. And then he asked me why. Then I explained to him to say, I wrote a report to Dr. Ngubane, and he didn't do what I expected him to do. Therefore, I don't see any reason to go back to him, because it seems as if when you talk to him, people end up, you know, people like, who's my supervisor now, who will know that I've spoken to the chairman. So I said, therefore, there's no one that I trust in that board that I can go and talk to. Then he told me that, no, you are fighting the wrong person. That's what Kulane Ntoma says. I said, why? He says, no, Dr. Ngubane told me that he wanted to suspend Koko on the basis of that information, and then the Tembe phoned somebody who phoned the minister, and then Koko was not suspended. So in other words, Ntoma was trying to explain to me what happened. And I must also say that it became so sensitive through you, Chair, that we started to be careful to who we talk to. And at the time, I also did not trust Ntoma because I was thinking he's on the other side. And the reason my engagement with Ntoma, I was also refusing to talk to Suzanne Daniels, because at the time, Suzanne was very close with Ntoma. So anything that we were talking about, it ended up known to the people who, for the lack of better words, victimized us. Because I was also victimized several times, marked in different areas and all that. So I was very careful to say, who do I talk to? And then it was at that time when Kulane told me, and it was confirmed here when Suzanne and Kulane Ntoma came to the meeting.
On page 8, paragraph 5.2, you say, Mr. Koko, that is the first paragraph on top there, Mr. Koko would treat employees differently if he believed that they had a different political agenda to him. Now, you are officials. You're not supposed to be having political agendas. You must be doing your job hired and paid for by ESCOM. What are you referring to by political agenda?
Through you, Chair, you're correct, we are officials. And that was my argument. This argument arose as a result of Koko sending one general to go and remove some of the employees at Kusile. And I asked him, what are the reasons? He couldn't give me the reasons. He says, instead he says to me, command and control. Okay, let me go back let me go back a bit, Chair. When he instructed General Martin to go and remove these employees, General Martin came to my office and then he says, man, this is a courtesy. I've given the instruction to go to Usile project and remove Franz Lakudi, Jan Gobal and a company. I said, what are the reasons? He says, no, I don't know the reasons. That's an instruction. Actually, I've just came here to tell you because me and General Martin, we had a good working relationship. He says, Mfethu, that's what I must tell you. I said, okay, the project director for Usile is Franz Sithole. Here is his number, if you want to call him. But at the time, I knew that I'm going to meet Franz Lakudi because we normally have the meeting with the CEOs of contractors in a project and discuss all the issues that affect the project. I knew that I would meet Franz in that meeting. I met Franz in that meeting. Franz told me and said, listen, I've got this instruction from Gogo. I said, okay, follow me to my office. Then Franz followed me to my office. Then he articulated exactly what General Martin articulated to me. I said, okay, let's go to Gogo's office. We stood up there and then we went into Gogo's office. I said to Franz, explain to Gogo what instruction have you received. But I did not tell Franz at the time that General did come and warn me about this. And then Franz explained to him as an acting CEO to say, these are the instructions that I've received. I want to know, it's now Franz, I want to know what are the reasons. Because those people that must be removed are professional people and are senior people. You can't remove people without any reason. The response that we got was that command and control. I said, what command and control? He says, the two of you do not understand the command and control. What is it that you don't understand? Then I requested Franz to leave the office. Franz is my subordinate. I said, Franz, leave the office. Franz, leave the office. I confronted him in the office, the two of us now. I said, but what is the problem? And then I started from back where I said, in the first place you sent General, why don't you call me? If there's anything that you know that these employees have done, why don't you tell me? Why are you sending General? And then he carries on, he says, his specific words were, you, Abraham, you are supporting the wrong politicians. I stood up in the very same meeting. I said, what politicians? He says, yeah, you're supporting Didi Mabuza. That's what he said. I said, but remember, I'm not supporting Didi because in ESCOM, I was appointed to be responsible for the stability in Mpumalanga province. And then from time to time on a quarterly basis, we'll go and meet in Mpumalanga province. The premier at the time, Didi Mabuza, appointed the MEC for Economic Development to deal with all the protests, the instabilities around the area. Usile being the big project, most of the instability was happening around that area. So I was the ESCOM representatives with the other managers of the different business unit. But the meeting did not end very well. I ended up leaving, and when he was talking about the politics, he mentioned that. Then I left the meeting. I went back to my office. I called Franz Stolle. I said, Franz, I don't get any reasons why these people must be removed. But because this guy is a CEO acting, I don't think we should execute the instruction. I said, the best thing that we can do, let's remove these guys and investigate what are the issues. But I told him as well that it's going to be a tough one because Franz Lakudi, as an example, reports to Peter Sibula. John Gopal was working for another company. So I also said to Franz, I'll also have a courtesy to talk to Franz to say, I'm confused. There's things that I don't understand. And Franz Lakudi was then removed. Peter Sibula took Franz to Deva Governor to work there. John Gabbala, who was working for a company called Tata, was also removed. I met that company as well because I needed to explain why their people are removed. I told them that for now I don't. And as I'm sitting here today, I couldn't establish the valid reasons why the people were removed.
Lastly, you, in your submission, portray yourself as a victim of intimidation and victimization at the hands, particularly of Mr. Koko, as well as your now suspension. Mr. Koko is no more at ESCOM. So the what appears to be your chief prosecutor is no more at ESCOM. So if indeed a charge is preferred against you, you must accept that they will be preferred by either by the acting GCE or his successor. And you should receive a fair hearing, absent Mr. Koko. What is your take on that?
That's my expectation. Through you, Chair. 2017 early, there's a guy by the name of General Rakau who was brought by Brian Molefe, responsible for the security. He came and had a meeting with me. But, Chair, you know, sometimes when you don't see the bigger picture, you don't record some of the things, but you, once all the things get revealed, then you start to connect there to say, but that thing happened, they meant this. When General Rakau met me, we had a lunch. He requested me, he says, Abram, you must smoke a peace pipe with Koko. That's what he said. And I said to him, look, there's nothing wrong that I've done to Koko. If I've wronged him, if I were to go and apologize, what am I apologizing for? And I said, I'm not going to do that. He says to me, Abram, Koko has instructed me to bring your head. And if I don't do that, I'm going to lose my job. He further says, my kids are still very small. I said, well, it's your call, but I'm not going to apologize to Koko because I don't know what we've done wrong. But my conclusion out of that, Chair, was that there were a lot of things that were happening at the time. And all the things that we were suspicious of, we reported them. And Koko believed that I was behind that, and I think that's the reason he isolated me and the other guys. And from that point of view, talking about the victimizations, I must say that we used to have the meetings and sit and discuss all these things that are unfolding. Myself and some of the guys that were encouraging me, say, don't resign. At some stage, we realized that we were followed. Probably we picked it up six times. When we have a meeting, like in the restaurant, the guys will come and take photos on us. And at some stage, I was marked three times on the road. So I could see that this thing is very serious and it's actually beyond us. And that's the reason we decided that all the people that in ESCOM that want to challenge these things, they must just make sure that they are not exposed, because I was already exposed in terms of what I've been, you know, experiencing. So on the basis of that, in actual fact, if you were to ask me. If you were to ask me about a fair hearing, I cannot be investigated by my enemies, people who will go and investigate me on certain instruction and then I get subjected to that. But that, I'll deal with it later.
No further questions, sir.
Thank you very much, Advocate Vanara. Luyenge. Honorable Luyenge, Honorable Magono, Honorable Swal, Honorable Sadie. Honorable Mare. Honorable Nobanda. Honorable Muganga Tabase. In that order.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first appreciate the presentation by you, Mr. Masango, which I believe it's an eye-opener in institutions important like ESCOM. But I want to applaud you for the stance that you have taken. But I've got some questions that I would want clarity on. One, do you think at ESCOM the promotion of ethical values and professionalism in the execution of the duty of the company was practiced by both the executive and the board?
Thank you. Through you, Chair. If you look at the ESCOM's governance processes, I still believe that ESCOM governance processes, including the ethics policy, I still believe strongly that they are one of the best. Where the problem is, the problem becomes when people start to not comply and breach the processes and then breach the policies. In the past few years that I've worked in ESCOM, I think we did very well as ESCOM. But somewhere between the line, the past 5 years, I think the wheel started to come loose. So I will put it to you to say right now there's still a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of the governance and ethics. What pains me is that some of the very good employees that are there, they get end up compromised because they get put in the positions and then they are expected to behave as instructed by the seniors. And it then starts to create confusion. But right now, direct answer is that it needs a clean-up.
So it means the practices that exist in ESCOM, they need to be cleansed totally, like the Department of Education in the Eastern Cape. What is taking place at ESCOM, the deliberate discharge of duties in a manner that is unconstitutional and lacks will to do the right thing, it's similar to that one that happens in the Department of Education. That's my, I'm putting a statement. Mr. Masang, when Mr. Tsotsi was informing you that there are these four executives that are going to be shown the door, was he in a state of shivering or was he excited? You know, when one is just informing you about something that he is excited on or he is part of or is the generator or the manufacturer of that, or did he show that, hey, I am instructed here, there is this going to happen?
I think when we entered the boardroom, it was very, very tense. And I must say that I found it very difficult for him to express what needs to happen. But he insisted that these things must happen because, I mean, to call us to a meeting, I mean, suspending four executives and the meeting does not last 10 minutes. We are not furnished with the details. He says, are you going to help us? It's more of an instruction. And then out of there, we then go to the media. And in my view, I could see that because they've already, planned the sequence of events. We go to a meeting,
out of the meeting we go to the media.
So you could see that this whole thing was supposed to happen. But me knowing Mr. Tsotsi, I don't think he was himself.
Mr. Tsotsi alleges that there was a meeting in Durban coordinated by Ms. Dudumyeni, and in that meeting he was instructed that there are these four executives that must leave. Would you say, Mr. Tsotsi, in relaying that kind of information, that also speaks to what Mr. Koko in that meeting, in the presence of Mr. Issa, I don't know whether he is Mr. when he or she behaves like this, when he or she is part or he, when he is sharing the same information that actually came from another meeting, don't you suspect that there is a big source for all this that had to happen, and it happened?
Yes, I agree with your comment. When it unfolded the way it was said, remember this whole thing, I met Koko yesterday, then the following day this is what's happening. I started to have a concern. But in both the meetings, I couldn't get a proper clarification. Even in that meeting that the chairman called with the board members, they couldn't give us, because though we were not part of EXCO, but we were general managers, if I may. We were supposed to be given, to be taken to confidence in terms of what are the reasons. And that did not happen. And I was always hopeful that when I meet them, because the meeting with Dan did not take place at the time, I hope that maybe Dan will give more clarification. Because I've met Gogo, no proper clarification, the board is sitting the following day, I get called to the chairman's office, I find my colleagues there, then we get called to the meeting. In the meeting, we are told that this is what's going to happen. Chair, through you, maybe it's very important that I also share with the committee in terms of what transpired between myself and Dan Marogana when I met him. That Saturday, it was 2 o'clock, I met Dan Marogana. Dan arranged that we meet.
Imaage Mkulu, share that in your own time with the chairperson, because now I have my own specified time. Keep that and then use that when you engage with the chairperson. Because it's eating on my time. It's a very important information. But I want you to tell me, what was the attitude of your colleagues who were to act in such positions? Were they also excited, or they were not themselves? Because it's not the usual way of doing things at ESCOM.
No one was happy. It was a very awkward and tense moment.
Essentially, would you share the same sentiments with me to say, since this, when you issued your so-called whistleblower report, already ESCOM had collapsed. There was no board, there was no executive. They were just individuals who were simple hell-bent to ensure that these service providers or companies that are Kubda related are getting what they want. That's my view. What is your view? Because I am selling that view to you, even to say, for a report that you are making, when it speaks to the current environment at ESCOM, and it actually speaks to issues that affect ESCOM to be a formidable company, a company that promotes ethics and values, but it is called a whistleblower report. Were you comfortable with the terminology that was given to your report?
I, I think I will concur with your view. When I wrote the report to Dr. Ben Ngubane, I never thought that it will be given that terminology, because I expected him as a chairperson to meet my other colleagues and consolidate and say what is that is not going right in ESCOM, which did not happen. And then instead, they investigated the very same report that I gave to Zola Tsotsi, I mean to Dr. Ben Ngubane.
390 million paid to a child related to one of the executives of Impulse. There is also the prepayment to Takeda for also payment trillion for work that has not been done and without contracts. What is it that you can say has been happening at ESCOM and at this particular moment when we are dealing with this? Do you have hopes that this will come right? Because we are here to make things happen, to change what is taking place at ESCOM, because ESCOM has a splendid role to play in the promotion of the economic development of the country.
Chair, I do have hope that ESCOM can be fixed, but I must also indicate that ESCOM is a very complex organization, and it's always difficult if you don't have the relevant people who can be able to go to the relevant places and fix it. Like I indicated earlier on, to say from the top to bottom, in certain instances it became a system. So if you remove this link, you must also remove another link somewhere, because you should make sure that when you clean it, you clean it properly, and you clean it from the top to bottom. And it's very simple. If ESCOM adheres to the policies and governance procedures that are there, many things can be avoided. It becomes a problem when things start to be decided outside that process, because then you falter all the process.
The second last question is, in relation to the service providers matter there, because the focus now is the one that goes to the Gupta-related companies and the big ones that are actually feeling that here were being suffocated deliberately. Is that a scenario affects other plus minus 40 service providers at ESCOM in terms of experiencing challenges of being not prioritized? Because seemingly it's very clear that the Gupta-related companies were getting preferential treatment, and their competitors at that level, they were experiencing that. Now, what about these other service providers? Were they getting a similar payment, a related problem where these Gupta-related will be paid even if job has not yet been done, and there are others were paid maybe 3 or 6 months or after having approached the courts in order to be paid? Because as an executive, even if you are not directly involved, do you know of any challenges that were affecting such as the service providers?
Look, whether it's a prepayment or it's a payment after the service is being provided, always is got to follow the strategy that you've presented and is approved by the board. And once it's approved by, you know, the relevant committees, then you stick to that decision that has been made. But in as so far prepayment on the service that is not provided, it's a bit awkward. And I'll give you the example. Let's say we sign a turbine contract where the service that is going to, you know, manufacture and provide that component, once the contract is signed, you then agree in terms of the payment schedule so that they can be able to place orders and that is allowed. That is allowed. And in terms of the processes, as far as we are concerned, it's the right thing to do. But it's got to follow a certain approved payment schedule that is directed to that manufacturing of that specific component.
Can you speak to both the issue of Brian Molefe and his early retirement or pre-retirement or whatever, as well as the normal practice of prepaying service providers? Is it normal at Eskom? Do you have a policy that governs prepayment? And did you experience such a practice benefiting those service providers that are not Gupta related? Because we have contradicting information. Mr. Koko said prepayment is a usual practice at Eskom. But at a later stage, one of the prominent financial gurus at Eskom was saying, no, it was never applied to any other service provider. What's your take? And I will rest my case there, Chair, after his response.
I never experienced any transaction where there was a prepayment made. As I indicated earlier on, that once you sign a contract, the payment schedule of that particular contract is embedded in the contract. That's one. Two, all the payments that are done for service provided, in terms of our process, you normally bring in the quantity surveyors to confirm that the work is being done, and then you sign all the payment certificate. Other than myself being exposed in what I've just explained, I haven't explained it, and I must also indicate that I never got involved on the coal side because it was not in my section, but I heard them talking about a lot of prepayment and all that, but I never got involved because it was not falling within my responsibilities and my accountabilities. But in Group Capital, on all the contracts that we've signed, we also put the payment schedule that along the process gets certified that the equipment is purchased or the work is being carried out.
But I wanted to explain on the meeting with Mr. Ben Marukane, the explanation that he was going to give to Honorable Luyenge, and Honorable Luyenge said he's going to eat on his time. I did not give him time.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as I was explaining, in the midst of that, Mr. Marukane agreed to meet me. He actually arranged that we meet in Pretoria. I met Mr. Marukane on that Saturday. It was around 1 o'clock. We met on that place. It was a very quiet place. We met myself and Mr. Marukane. I asked him, Chair, then what's going on? Explain to me. Chair, he couldn't explain to me. Except he says, Abraham, this thing is political. I said, but what does it mean if you say this whole thing is political? He says to me, because I was insisting to get the reason, Chairperson, why? Why are they suspended? What is the issue? Because I've been asking that and I can't get that. The answer that I got was political. And then I said, but then if that's the case, Monday I'm going back to Zolazozi. I don't want to act. It's me telling them. I said, I'm not going to act. Then advised me, he says, Abraham, no, no, don't do it that way. You guys, I've been working with you. You know what we were doing. Go have a meeting with all the guys. Also tell them that I say, you guys, you must carry on, concentrate on the claims, make sure that you do what we plan to do. I think the plan that we had for the 6 months, he says it's appropriate. He says, carry on doing that. Okay? And then he says, Abraham, if there's an advice that I'll give it to you, because you are working with the provincial government in the Mpumalanga, make sure that you stay closer to those guys, because these things are political. You will not be able to survive. That's what he used. He says, please, stay closer to the right people. That's the advice that I will give you. But, Chair, I must indicate that, like Honorable Luyenge was asking,
at some stage, Chair, I must say that I was also starting to get disappointed about the parliament, about the members, to say that when all these things are unfolding, no one is attending it until this committee was established. And the reason I say that, Chair, after I've met Ms. Ntlantla Krai, the following day I received a call from the same Mr. Gogo, saying that you wabua, you've spoken to somebody. And I go and meet Dan Marugano. Then I receive a call, you've met Dan. So I started to be very worried to say, are these guys following me or are they having a way to see who do I talk to and all that? And then it started to become very tense. But I must indicate, Chair, that when Brian Molefe came in, Brian treated us very fair. Brian was very fair. Because when Brian came in, I explained to him what I'm doing. He gave me the target, and we had a very good relationship. But when Brian left, I think the exposing of these things get accelerated when Gogo went in. Because all of a sudden, things were just unfolding like nobody's business. And when you raise the hand, your hand might not be looked at, otherwise you get chopped off. So things started to accelerate to the wrong direction, and that's the reason I decided to say maybe let me raise it with the chairman. And Chair, I must also indicate that we had different forms, informal ways of reporting some of these things to the high authority as well.
Thank you for that, Honourable Mazwani. Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'm sure we'll all agree it's a very wide, entangled web, and it's often difficult if you're not part of it to understand exactly the depth of it. So I'm just going to try and unpack a little bit of what you said so that it's easier for people to understand. I'm deeply concerned that you took the bold step of creating a whistleblower's report. And from what I read in your statement, sir, you did so under the understanding that it would be confidential and that Chairperson Dr. Ben Ngubane, then, unknowing to you, released this report to the entire ESCOM board. Is that what happened? Okay, so we agree that's what happened. So you were then exposed.
Honourable Mazon, can that be recorded in saying he agrees?
Of course. Chair, completely up to you. So you have to say that you agree for the record.
Yes, I agree for the record, and I can substantiate that.
Okay.
Chair, if you allow me quick. I did not email the report. I hand-delivered the report to Dr. Ngwane's office, and then he called me. He went through the report. He says, Abraham, thank you. I will act on this report. That's what he said. The very same day I've arranged a meeting with the chairman of the People and Governance, Venetia Tlaib. Because remember now I was starting to say, but this thing is a system. Then I went to meet Venetia Tlaib in Santi. It was in the evening. When I get there, he said to me, Abraham,
give me a lift back to Manowar Park. He says to me, you don't have to tell me what you're going to tell me. I know everything. And he says to me, don't worry. We are going to a meeting now. 6 o'clock, we're going to solve this problem. I didn't explain what I wanted to explain to her. And I made an assumption that, oh, this report now it has reached these people.
So, given what you've told us now, I think it's fair to assume or to deduce that Dr. Benengubane actually acted in a mala fide fashion by taking a report that you had hand-delivered to him as a whistleblower and making it public that you were that whistleblower. It put you in danger, and it also sabotaged the work that you were trying to achieve as a whistleblower.
Through you, Chair, I'll answer it in twofold in my view. One, you're 100% correct. But if Dr. Ngubane acted the way he wanted to act, things were not going to unfold the way they unfolded. So if he shared the report with the board members with the intention that this is a problem, we deal with it and then we deal with it now, we would have avoided a lot of things in Eskom.
So from your report, you state that originally your relationship with Mr. Coco was okay. You were on the right track. And then in 2016, your relationship began to sour. Was there a specific event that occurred that caused the souring of this relationship?
Through you, Chair, as I've indicated that I was responsible for the project, what worried me and disturbed me when my team in different projects will prepare the submission for a certain transaction, they will go and present it to ExCorps, which is a committee just below the board tender committee, and when they present it there, then the ExCorps is made up of the members of the ExCo, which I was not part of the ExCo because most of the transactions were coming from the projects. My team will even go without me being there, and the committee will call me if there's a need for me to come in and further clarify what the team is presenting. I had two submissions. Those two submissions, they went through the committee, through the ExCorps, and then they went to the board tender committee. Gogo, who's a member of the ExCorps, he never attended those meetings, but when these submissions go to the board tender committee, we'll go there and remove these submissions. And I think that's where I was very unhappy, because in the project, if you lose time, it means more money to the contractor. And he couldn't give me reasons why he removed it. But what surprised me is the term he said in the board tender committee, we allow him to do that instead of telling him to say, go and sit at ExCorps and influence the submissions before they come. And from that point of view, I realized that the gloves are off, and I couldn't understand what is going on. And then the relationship started to be sour. Because in my mind, I thought that, but this is a sabotage to the project. And that, in actual fact, stay in my mind. And the following year, I could sleep, because at some stage, when we wanted to synchronize the Busine unit, we had a problem. And I couldn't understand why Boko would refuse for us to synchronize the unit, because the more you synchronize the unit, the more you save money. The more you commercialize the good I mean, the more you save money. So I realized that, okay, I'm going to stick to what I know. What I don't know, I'm not going to stick to.
Now, in a lot of reports that we've read, we know that Kusile is way behind timelines, etc., and the blame is very much being passed on to you as head of the operation. At any time, during your tenure at ESCOM, were you asked to perhaps avoid a certain tender, look positively on a certain tender, deal with certain companies that you weren't happy dealing with in terms of the Kusile build?
No, I was not asked. I can't remember any specific request that I must, you know, process or work with any company.
In terms of what you've just told us about the sighing of your relationship with Mr. Coco, could it be possible, and because it sounds like certain documents were removed from you and that's what caused you to be upset, would there be a reason that these documents were removed? Were they perhaps removed so that the tender process wasn't as transparent as it should have been? Because it sounds to me quite strange that these documents would be removed at the last minute. So my natural assumption would be that you're removing documents so that the tender process isn't transparent.
Through you, Chair, one of the submissions that was put forward was when we were building the 10-year HDM, the first phase was finished, and the team recommended that the same contractor that did the first phase must do the second phase. And in doing that, the team was going to save more than $1 billion. Because remember, it is true that at some stage we did not have schedule certain in this project. And that's what was worrying the public and ourselves. But at the time then we managed to get schedule certainty to say at what time when these projects will be delivered, and we were comfortable with that. But when we achieved that, we were concerned about the cost of these projects. Now the main focus was to save as much as we can out of these projects. As you will recall that this project cost kept on escalating. So the team in various projects were tasked that any cent that we can save, we must save. You'll recall that Kusile was sitting at 160 billion. We pushed it, we were saving 4 billion out of that, and then Medupi, it was 145, and then we saved 10 billion. So that was the strategy, to try and squeeze and save as much as we can. Now, the very same submission that Gogo removed ended up in Brian's office. Because Gogo came to me, told me that I've removed your submission. I said, you will put that submission back because the cost of that second phase of the 10-year HDM is going to cost us twice. We went to Brian's office. I told Brian in a meeting, I said, Brian, Gogo is supposed to sit at X-Corps because it's a process. It takes almost 3 months to pay the contract. So if the executive team is uncomfortable with the submission, they stop it right there, and then we go and review the strategy. But if you stop it at the board tender committee, you lose more time. So I said to Brian, this guy must sit there and give his input, because from ex-corps, then another executive member who shares that, he goes and presents the submission to the board tender committee, not myself. And then Brian said to Coco, you must go and sit at X-Corps. And then Brian left us in the meeting. He said, sort out your problem. He left us in his office. We left. I went back to the team. I said, team, you know what? There's so much argument around this. The best thing, let's take this to the open tender. One of the reasons that Gogo gave was that Treasury will not approve the submission. I said to him, let's take it to Treasury then. And if we take it to Treasury, if Treasury says to me, it's okay for us to pay $1 more billion in this, then we'll do it. But where I'm sitting as a group executive for the project, if we do it this way, we'll save those to $1 billion. As I'm speaking now, they went out on the tender committee. Guess what? They are paying 800 million more. Whatever. That's the indication that they'll pay. Now we lost the opportunity to save that billion. The other transaction that they removed, submission that they removed, it was on the cabling. Siemens was awarded the cabling contract, and Siemens subcontracted Eskom Rotec Industries. Eskom Rotec Industries is our subsidiary, and they performed because we seconded some of the Eskom senior project managers to go and help our subsidiary to deliver the cabling contract on Unit 1, and they performed. So we decided then, seeing that Eskom Rotec Industry performed, why don't we take this scope and give it to our own? Because they performed. And he had a problem with that. He says we must give it to ABB. But at a later stage, I also learned that Impulse was subcontracted to ABB. Whether it was the reason or not, I didn't know. But at the time, I was arguing that if Eskom Rotec Industries does this work, we are investing to our own, and some of the refurbishment that is done in different projects within the other power stations, we use our own people, which is Eskom Rotec Industries.
Yeah, I just want to place it on record because I think it might have got lost in the explanation. So you found out that Impulse, which is the company that had as one of the directors, Mr. Mashele Koko's stepdaughter, was the preferred company by Mr. Koko instead of doing it through the in-house Eskom company that you knew had the ability to do the work already?
Yes, Chair. What I'm saying is that ABB subcontracted Impulse. That's what I'm saying. Through you, Chair, if I may. Four months down the line, he comes back, he says, no, give the work to Eskom Rotec. 3 months down the line, he says, no, let's give this work to Eskom Rotec.
Chair, I think we get the gist of what the witness is telling us. The meeting at Melrose Arch, I'm sure you understand why it's become such a big issue for this committee. When you went to Melrose Arch, categorically, can you just tell this committee and put it on public record, who, in your understanding, was going to be at this meeting and who actually was at this meeting? The Melrose Arch meeting that you had to turn around and get directions to.
Through you, Chair, Honorable Mazoni, when I was called to a meeting, I was never informed that there's going to be the third person in a meeting. Koko called me. Remember, Dan is on leave. Koko is standing in Dan's place. So, in other words, at that week, at that point, Koko is my boss. So I went to have a meeting with my boss. And when I got there, then I got introduced. And then he told me what he wanted to tell me. Issa didn't say anything. Issa didn't talk about the executive. Issa did not talk about whatever. This one, I'm sitting here, this one is like telling me what is going to unfold.
So I just want to get it straight. So you get to this meeting at Melrose Arch. Your boss, your standing boss, because of the situation, is Koko. Salim Issa's there. You introduce to him. And then Salim Issa starts to give you instructions.
If you call it instruction, I will not disagree. But what Issa said at the time, he says, you guys, Abraham, because you're working in the projects, the contracts at Eskom are a mess. You must fix it, you guys, because the public is complaining. So I took it very positive because it was also a public knowledge that, you know, that the cost of these projects are getting out of hand.
Did it strike you as unusual that someone like Salim Issa would be at a meeting like this? Because you said you were introduced to him, so I gather you hadn't met him before. Did you know what company he was working for and why he was telling you that these contracts are a mess? Because, I mean, you're the professional and you're the expert in this situation. So you've got some guy who you've just met telling you what you're doing wrong.
I think for me, it was not unusual for us to be called in a meeting, and I took it as one of the meetings. And I must also indicate, I started to follow it properly, to say, how does it come in the picture and all that, when I started to hear about trillion. That's why I started to say, hang on, but this is not what we know, it's big. Then I started to myself to connect the dots. But I must say that it was also my failure, because I would have asked Koko, but I always made an assumption to say, you know what, here's my boss, he has called me to a meeting. I come here and then I I listened, and he told me what he wanted to tell me. And it struck me, because my argument was that there's no way that ESCOM can suspend four executives without a reason. And I think the discussion revolved around that, because I wanted to know, why are they suspended?
At any time during your work here at ESCOM, were you ever asked to meet with any of the Gupta family, any of the Zuma family, or anyone else that you can think of that perhaps you shouldn't have been meeting with, that you were asked to meet with?
No. Specifically on the people that you mentioned, I was never asked to meet anyone of that. But I must indicate that in ESCOM, from time to time, people come and they raise certain issues. If I'm the relevant person, I will go to the meeting and listen and give the necessary response. But these specific people that you're mentioning, I was never asked to meet any of them.
Okay, I'm going to rephrase my question just for the record. You were never asked to meet with any of them. Did you ever meet with any of them?
No, I never met any Gupta family. Never met any Zuma family.
Now, in these discussions of money, especially the ones when we're talking about the bid tender committee and the fact that Mr. Kokko took, you know, your submissions out of it, is it not strange that the CFO, Anoj Singh, isn't involved given the staggering amounts of money that we're talking about? Because I mean, I personally, if I was the CFO of ESCOM, I would love to show off the fact that, you know, we were saving R1 billion or had the possibility to save R1 billion. And in our conversations today, it's a name that hasn't come up a lot. So where and why was Anoj Singh not being informed that these huge amounts of money were, you know, were possibly going to be spent where not necessary? Did you deal with Anoj Singh?
Yes, I dealt with Anoj Singh on the entire project. I gave Anoj Singh, in terms of his forecasting, more than 14 billion. I said, this is what we intend to save in the project. And we confirmed that 14 billion. And I also promised him that, as may to be, if we get some of the things right, will give him additional 5 billion to the 14 billion. So Anoj and both Anoj and Brian, they were comfortable because it was recorded that this is what we're trying to do. Because as I said earlier on, I was comfortable with the schedule certainty, but on the cost, it was a problem. And it goes back to the earlier poor planning that we did when we started this project.
Chair, I'm about to conclude. This is my second last question. Given everything that you know now, given your suspension, given what you've learned in the media, given the, as you call, the sham of a disciplinary hearing, given the fact that you worked for so many years in ESCOM, given that you've worked on these massive projects like Kasile, is it your opinion that state capture is a real thing? And that ESCOM was certainly a state-captured entity?
Yes, I think it is a real thing, because if you look at some of these things that went wrong, you could see that our own process somewhere was flawed, which is a problem. But the other portion of me is happy in a sense that I think we catch it before it's doomsday and it can be fixed. It's a matter of getting the right people who can go in and also work with the ESCOM employees, because I must stress, Honorable Mazoni, that there are good ESCOM employees there who some of them assisted you as well about these things, and those employees we must keep. Because ESCOM being a complex organization, you need people who know which button to press. If you bring completely new people, you will not be able to fix. And it is my view that it will take probably 3 to 5 years to get it right. and fix it. But my advice is that those processes and procedures are good procedures. Don't tamper with them. Allow them to unfold and make sure that you comply within the parameters of this governance framework in ESCO.
Chair, my final question. I'm very disturbed that you have been threatened and that you felt unsafe. And I feel almost reluctant to ask you this, but I have to, because you've said that your safety has been brought into question. In your opinion, given the fact that ESCOM was captured, who allowed the capture of ESCOM to happen? And who should face the might of the law for allowing state-captured ESCOM to unfold in the way it did?
Through you, Chair, I think this is a very dicey question, but I will share my observation and my opinion. And that's the reason I was saying that as a South African, at some stage I felt that you as well, you are failing us. Because, Chair, you've got the minister, the deputy minister, the DG, you've got the board, you've got the executive team. And these things are unfolding in front of our eyes, all of us. And it got to a point where you could see that a committee like this has to come in to break that chain. It was only this committee that could assist. And I must also congratulate you, Chair, that we started to breathe as well when this committee kicks in on the matters. And Chair, the reason I say that, if you are the executive of ESCOM, we are sitting there, not all the executives that are vocal, and myself and the other guys who saw it, when we go to any board member, you're talking to the same system. Probably out of the board member, you can count 3-4 that were not involved, in my own observation, who didn't also understand what's going on. You go to the minister. I don't believe that the minister did not understand what's going on. And by the way, Chair, the informal communication was reaching the minister. And that's one of the reasons that pains me, Honorable Mazoni, that at some stage I wanted to resign. Because where do we report if the system is like this? Where do we report? And the fact that the ESCOMites, those who saw it, persuaded me not to. I decided to stay. And hence my life was then subjected where it was subjected. And I must say that it's very painful. Because you can only fall back to the family. You fall back to the family, you fall back to the friends, because the people who are in power, whom you expect that might come in and resolve the situation, they are not coming to the fore. But because I grew up in South Africa, I grew up in the street, I also did my rounds, you know, sourcing advice from outside, from politicians, from wherever, to say this is the situation. But where we are today, I think I'm a bit relieved that we've got a new board who will look at these things differently. We've got this committee that has come forth, and many things are unfolding for the sake of our kids and sake of ESCOM, because ESCOM was a very good company, and it's still a good company, and it can be, I believe it can be managed properly and better. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to make a follow-up on the question of Honorable Mazone posed on you and saying, when you were at Merrill's Park, going to that meeting with your boss and meeting that person, were you shocked? Were you afraid? Especially when you were given the instruction, what went into your mind?
In my entire tenure in ESCOM, I never went to a meeting where somebody took my phone and put it outside. It was for the first time. And that's what worried me, to say, but hang on, what is this mafia style of, you know, like taking the phone? And I go in there, they tell me that four executives are going to be suspended. And I say, what's the reason? And there's no reason that it's coming out.
I said, I'm not going to get involved. Let me watch the space and see. But I believe that if I met Dan, Dan was going to tell me what's going on. Hence, Dan was a key person, because I couldn't establish the reason. And I couldn't like establish the reasons, you know, why they, because before I went to Melrose Arch, I was with Gogo at Megawatt Park. And then I went to the committee, presented, on my way back to Ust, then I get called. Why didn't tell me at Megawatt Park? Because I was at Megawatt, but he was the boss. I said, let me go meet him.
Give over to you.
Thank you, Chair. And Ms. Masonga, I also want to commend you for your whistleblower's report and for coming forward to the committee. And it's highly regrettable, as a member of this committee and as well as the Justice Committee, where we spent a lot of time passing the Protected Disclosures Act, that you as a whistleblower have been prejudiced by, firstly, the document that you submitted to Dr. Bugani Ben Ngubani, that you then have been prejudiced, put on suspension for shedding light. And I think had greater action been taken then, a lot of the harm might have been avoided. So from my side, I want to commend you, I want to thank you. And it is, again, as we've said to many other witnesses, it is an issue of great concern to us that you also were threatened and have people taking pictures of you and you feel threatened. Can I ask you at this stage, have you received any further threats, death threats in the recent times?
Yeah, look, recently I haven't observed anything, but the measures that are put in place for me to be safe and the family, those measures are still there. I'm still, hiding my, you know, sometimes I switch off the cell phones, and that's the type of life that one is living right now. In actual fact, there's a lot of questions that are asked to say that, is this thing worth it? Because, I mean, there's life after Eskom, but we did what we did for the sake of the country, to say if Eskom goes down, we all go down. But to answer you direct, the measures are there. People are calling me, people that I don't know, say whatever they want to say. Some they behave as if they are police. They want to come and arrest me and all that. So that's what we go through. But I think, I believe that one will definitely pull through. But the 2016, towards the end of 2016, 2017, it's been a nightmare while I was still in Eskom. And that's the reason that I say, you know, you want to suspend me for not going to school because you want to sidetrack me. In actual fact, they did it twice, which is not in the report. They say I must go to Lufthansa. And all these things that were happening, because right now when you look back, you could understand why those things were happening. But I believe that we'll pull through. But the measures are in place that myself and the family that we put in, because Eskom is nowhere to be found on all these things. And that's the painful part, because if you read, for example, the past 2 days, Suzanne was attacked in the house. And those are some of the things that, I mean, the cars were seen parked outside the house and all that. Those are the things that I think most of the employees are afraid to come and talk and say these things, because when they go out there, they are alone. But I think eventually we'll pull through.
Chair, we need to look into that issue about Ms. Suzanne Daniels. It's the first that's come to my knowledge of that. And we need to find out, because that is intimidation of a person that has testified here. And it's very concerning to me.
I agree with you. We will look at those.
Obtain a briefing about that.
Yes.
But you see, what you've also indicated is one of the reasons that you didn't give evidence at Mr. Coco's disciplinary hearing was, besides it being what you perceived it to be a sham, you also felt threatened. Is that correct?
Yes, it's correct. Like when I mentioned 2016, remember I said earlier on people will keep on taking the photos and all that, and I knew, and I might not have the evidence, but for me I could see from which direction all these things were coming from. One of the major reasons that I did not want to go and testify is because the way the whole process was handled. I was very uncomfortable to say, but hang on, this thing has got a predetermined type of outcome, so what's the point? And it happened to be like that.
Correct. And that was Ms. Daniel's evidence here as well, that she indicated that it was a sham in her view, as when she was involved as head of legal. And so that is another issue that is a concern of ours. But I'd like to take you to the meeting at Melrose Arch. Let's get that right. Arch. On the 11th of March. You indicated in your evidence that Mr. Kokos was very nervous at that meeting. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what I also, you've just now, in answer to Ms. Mazzoni's question, that it was strange to you why you had just come from Megawatt Park, where Mr. Coco was, why you didn't have a meeting with him at Megawatt Park. Instead, you went to Melrose Arch, and you thought that's your indication. You weren't aware that there'd be a third party at that meeting. Is that correct?
Correct.
Now, Melrose Arch, as we know, is the offices of Trillian and Mr. Salim Issa, who you then met. And you had no idea who Mr. Salim Issa is. Is that correct?
Correct.
And we now know that he is Trillian. And we know that he is the right-hand man to the Guptas. Are you aware of that now?
Yes, that's what I'm aware of now.
And as you link the dots and as you see the Budlender report and other reports putting it together. And so in your meeting there, and you give a very positive explanation of what to me sounds quite astonishing, that an outside person, that you come to a meeting and he says to you comments about your contracts, and you quite benevolently almost say, well, it was in the best interests of Eskom. I would think that another person, although you were in the presence of your boss, but the question arises, who is this person asking those questions? You understand? In hindsight, it's almost like a person giving instructions. And you also indicated in your evidence that, please help me out, Ms. Hershey, that Mr. Coco seemed to be the runner. Did you say that earlier today? Did I hear you say that?
Yes, when I was answering the question, and when I say it seems to be the runner, I have drawn a conclusion that he's carrying certain instruction from where at the time I couldn't say, but I could see that this guy is pushing in certain direction.
So now you can draw the dots, and it would indicate, would you agree that it's highly probable that he was getting instructions from Mr. Salim Issa from the Guptas?
Well, my view at the time was that he was getting, at the time, my view was that he was getting instruction from the board.
From the board?
From the board.
But that would be in the normal course of events. So that wouldn't be a runner necessarily. Are you saying, what did you mean when you said he was a runner?
I meant that he was a runner to execute what the board wanted us to execute. Because for me, it was also very funny that the board gets involved in the operations.
And I think that's a very valid point, and that is something that the new board has pointed out. We see the intervention of the board tender committee and all the issues relating to Trillion, relating to Tegeta, relating to the prepayments, and that all that evidence that has come out. And we now know the relationship between the board members who, depending on the dates and which board members, but they were definitely Gupta-aligned board members as well. You might not have all that knowledge, but that evidence has been presented to us. What I'd like to ask you, and this might be a bit difficult, but you see, we have to balance evidence on probabilities. And we had evidence here from Ms. Daniels that on the 9th of March, she was invited to a meeting with Mr. Coco. One would have thought that, like yourself, that such a meeting would have taken place at Megawatt Park, where he invited her to a meeting to discuss issues relating to, if I remember, his evidence relating to his, he was concerned about his future. But he picked her up and took her, he picked her up at a restaurant, J.B. Rivers Restaurant, where one could also have had a meeting if it was only the two of you, and then took her to Melrose Arch, where the same similar discussion took place with Mr. Salim Issa, where the whole issue of the disciplinary process was discussed, and she, as the legal person, was asked, if you suspend people, what must you do? And in the presence of Mr. Coco, she was then told of the suspension of Mr. Matona, Ms. Molefe, Mr. Dan Marikani, and Mr. Coco himself, which is exactly what almost happened with your meeting, although you weren't asked about the process, you were advised this is what's going to happen. Now, on the probabilities, Mr. Kupko comes to us and he says, yes, he had a meeting with Ms. Daniels, but it was at Melrose Arch, which is strange because that's where Trillion is, but Mr. Issa was not there. And he emphasized that, even to use colloquial Afrikaans, to say, hey, was nie daar. Now, on the probabilities, it seems very clear to me that that meeting did take place with Mr. Coker, with Ms. Daniels, with Mr. Salim Issa, the day before your meeting took place, where instructions were given again. Now, it might be difficult for you to comment, but on the probabilities, do you think it's possible?
Well, I think, through you, Chair, given all the information that is put on the table, it's for the committee and the public to judge.
You see, I think your evidence is very helpful because it indicates to us that Mr. Cocker wanted to meet with you and he could have met at Melrose, could have met at Megawatt Park. Instead, you also were invited to, and it's a pity we don't have the opportunity to put this evidence to Mr. Cocker, because he might well say that you did meet, the two of you, and hey, Mr. Issa, was nie daar. So this is the type of challenges that we face with as we consider. But I want to just ask you now, with hindsight, as you are connecting the dots, and you seem, as we are starting to see all the information coming out, there is a statement in an academic research document that's based on a lot of evidence at that stage that says, from the efforts of South African Council of Churches report, ALTA, state capacity research, there is an overwhelming and growing body of evidence included in the Gupta leaks that have been built up. Taken together, it suggests that the power vested in the president, certain ministries and the boards and executives of SOEs has been misused to benefit the interests of connected individuals and entities, most prominently the Gupta family. Now, can I ask you, as you, with hindsight now, and you see what happened to you, do you follow the pattern that developed when those four executives were fired, that they had to be replaced? Ms. Molefe,
you know Ms. Malefa, who is the CFO. A fine, she really impressed us. Her career's been destroyed almost. She stood up against the Guptas, refusing to extend, when Mr. Mashila wanted to extend that 43 million contract for the ANNCP contract. She stood up, she refused to sign it. So then the process is get rid of those executives, get rid of the board, get rid of the minister even, all the way, and replace it with aligned people that will cooperate. And you see the pattern. Those executives are removed. You have the dentist report. You have Mr. Corker tells you, I'm going to be removed, but I'll come back. The other three will not come back because he, the allegation is, was also involved. Do you agree, if you see the pattern that state capture at a grand scale has occurred at ESCOM, and that you are a victim of that?
Through you, Chair, I think it's a fair comment, and I agree with it.
And so the process from here, you are now subject to disciplinary action. Mr. Corker would have been part of that. He would have been given evidence. From here, would you be cooperating with other law enforcement agencies? Have you been approached? You said you got calls from people that purported to be police, but have you been approached at all by any law enforcement agency following your whistleblower report?
No, I was never approached.
Now, you see, this is another issue, Chair, that is, to me, this is a serious whistleblower report that was given, that there was Cliff Decatur, there was all types of things, but there were inquiries. It was supposed to be part of the inquiry against Mr. Coco. The charges were reduced, but we see no law enforcement action at all. The second issue is we will make recommendations here. But again, there is a commission of inquiry on state capture. And I trust that you would also avail yourself to give evidence there as to what you experienced. And would you consider that?
I have no reason not to explain what I've experienced.
Because you see, as we are exposing these issues, the sad part is you indicated earlier that ESCOM is a wonderful company, but it is faced with severe financial constraints. It's bankrupt, and largely because of contracts that were illegally preferred and given to people. You see what's happening. You probably read in the papers on a day-to-day basis. You see what's happening with the Optimum Mines, All in Business Rescue, the Tegeta. All those issues. I mean, it seems almost that there's a chaotic situation that is threatening the whole of ESCOM, with coal supply being threatened to Endrina from an Optimum. Would you agree with that it is quite an untenable situation?
Yes, I would agree with it, and I think it needs urgent attention as well. Because you see the problem, ESCOM being a complex company, that chaotic situation that you're explaining, it's got a reputation, and somebody asked to say, why are we not seeing it like this? Why are we not seeing it immediately? So in ESCOM, if something happened today, you will not see it today. But somewhere down the line, you'll start to feel the pain.
I'd like you to just explain to me, what is the role of the group capital executive? What is that role? That is the position you were acting in, is that correct?
No, I was not acting in the position. I was appointed as a group executive for Group Capital.
What is that? Sorry,
it
what
looks
is that?
After all the projects.
The projects?
Yeah, like Medupi, Busile, Ingula refurbishment in the stations, the steam generator projects. It just looks at the projects, new projects, and refurbishment and renovation in the organization.
Who took over from you, Mr.?
When I was taken to the office of the acting chief executive, they appointed Prince Govender.
And we heard evidence yesterday of some of the allegations against Mr. Govender, if I remember correctly. But you don't have to comment on that. But what is interesting was this run-in or the
the situation with you and Mr. Kokko about you going to on leave and going to Harvard. It seems that you were to be sent to Harvard for a month in April 2015, and we know 2015 was a very significant year with a number of big decisions taken for ESCOM. And that you said no, you were supposed to go in March and April. Why was it so important for Mr. Kokko to almost get you out of the way?
Well, I don't know, and that's the reason that I declined. In actual fact, it was not 2015, 2017. I meant to go in September 2017. And there was a guy that was supposed to go April in 2017. We agreed with Brian Molife while he was still our chief executive officer that those of us that never had an opportunity to go to Harvard, we have to, because Brian recommended that it's a good school, we'll learn one or two things. So that was planned. Now all of a sudden I must February take a leave, go sit home, then April I go to Harvard, then I refuse. But at the time in my mind it was evident that there's so many things that are going on. So I rather not go. But at any time, if I were to go tomorrow, I'll go.
Was it not that you were a possible candidate as chief executive officer?
I will put it to you that I did apply for a position, and I was called to the interview, and I was interviewed. That's all I know. What the recruitment agency has presented to the board, I don't know, but I heard that the report was given to the board and the minister.
So it would have been useful to have you out of the way, or how would you surmise that?
I don't have a comment.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Those are my questions. Thank you very much. And I just want to thank Mr. Msongo.
Honorable
Teddy.
Mr. Msongo, good morning. Afternoon.
Morning, Honorable Bautzeli.
I think let me join my colleagues in commending you for agreeing to come and assist the committee in the work that you are doing. Because from the presentation, the impression I get of a person who is very courageous, who has tried by all means to refuse to take unlawful instructions, where you have managed to do some of these things, for lack of better words, it was for fear of victimization. I think I must appreciate that. I want to start with the 4 billion contract awarded to Tongva for a boiler at Duva Power Station. The business day on the 4th of July 2017 reported that this contract was only awarded some few days after the suspension.
And seemingly you had already signed the submission. But having raised some questions, can you talk to that particular issue?
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Terry, Duva 3 was also one of the projects that was under my responsibility in the appointment. And we went out to the market to try and get the dealers to come and fix, restore the border at Duva 3. In terms of our process, we went to the board with a strategy to say this is a strategy, this is how we want to restore and fix border 3 at Duva Power Station. And then the strategy was very clear. The strategy was that we will go out when all the
out to the open market, when all the bidders comes back, we will negotiate with the first two. Now, our evaluation process is very intricate because you've got the technical evaluation, safety, finance, and they do all this evaluation, then the procurement, then consolidate, and then we go and present. So we went out, the bidders came back, and then there were two companies that were in the first two, and then we negotiated, the team negotiated with the two. And I've signed the strategy, I must say I've signed the strategy, and the submission that went to the board in terms of the feedback, in terms of how far we have also signed that submission. But subsequent to that, the board requested us to negotiate with all of them. In other words, now it's deviating from the initial strategy. And because it is, I think, a public knowledge, I must say it, Honorable Terry, that at the time, what was presented was that GE was sitting at 3.2 billion rand, and then the Maren Robert JV was sitting at 3.3, and then I don't remember the third one, but Dongfeng was sitting at 5 or 6 somewhere there. I tend to be corrected, but either number 5 or number 6 at 6 billion. And as we go on, we negotiated. At the time, I think it was a fair request to say, let's clarify with the other bidders. And we were at the time to sign the final submission that goes to the board, recommend who do we issue or sign a contract with. And prior to that, I requested some documents from the team that was evaluating this tender. I requested the auditor's report. I requested the assurance and forensic report. I also requested the report from the legal, because before you sign the submission,
if you can just summarize, because I still have some other issues that I need to clarify.
Yeah, before you sign the submission, you must have these people that I've mentioned as independent to verify that the process was clean. So at that time, then I got removed to the CEO's office. After that, I didn't know what happened.
Is it correct that this company, this Chinese company, was a billion more expensive than the other rival? Is it correct?
Yes.
Your suspension letter says you are accused of undeclared conflict and general corruption. Can you talk to that one?
Yeah, through my legal representative, I've written to ESCOM to clarify that to me, which they never clarified, except that they are saying there was a contract, a tubular contract that was not done above the board, and in terms of my record, it was done above the board. Until today, I haven't gone through the clarification because they never sent me any such sheet. Like I indicated earlier on to say this morning, it was brought to my attention that the charge sheet has been forwarded to my lawyer, which I'm still going to consider.
Okay. The press conference that was convened by the board after the suspension of the four executives, who addressed that press conference and what was sent to the media?
The press conference was addressed by the former chairperson Zola Tsosi, and they told the media that the four executives are suspended and they are appointing somebody to do the certain investigation. So he also indicated that they felt that while the investigation is taking place, it must not be interrupted. That's the reason these executives are suspended. Okay. Surely by now you have heard of the Durban meeting. I think my colleagues tagged it earlier, including Advocate Banara. Are you able to link this meeting with your Melrose Arch meeting? Somehow, the link between the Durban meeting and the Melrose one.
The information on the table, if you look at all the information, you can pick up that there's something common in all the meetings.
The Salim Issa at the Melrose Arch meeting made some comments that from your presentation you took them in a positive light about the contracts. Why were you not worried about his interest as a person who at no stage had links with ESCOM? Why would you view these comments in a positive light when Salom has got nothing to do with ESCOM?
At the time, it was a public and a common knowledge that the projects are not going very well. And the claims, the contract claims that were put to us were exceeding the project value. So anybody at that point in time raising concerns around the projects to say your projects are going to be triple what you guys are forecasting, that was a relevant comment if that was not attended and changed. But I must indicate that we could manage to reduce all the claims that were there to close to 6 billion. And the team, I think, did very well.
Part of your submission, there is annex C28. Do you have it? C28. I wanted to quickly talk to the relevance of that annex to the issues at hand. I don't remember the... Yeah, but from my notes here, it's C28. I was begging to understand the relevance of that annex to the issues at hand. Just that I'm relying on my notes here, but it's C28 annex. Just very briefly, I'm interested in the relevance of that document to the issues at hand. What is it all about? Yes, I got it. This is the document that was addressed to Dr. Ben Ngubane that was later termed as a whistleblower report. It's a report that I prepared and gave it to Dr. Ben Ngubane to say, this is my observation in my division. Go and ask other executives, because there's also a lot of wrong things that are going on in their division.
The 2-page corporate plan that cost 26.6 million. Do you know anything about it?
No.
Even yesterday, the witness was here, spoke about it. You don't know anything about it?
No.
The corporate plan that was done by Trillium for ESCOM.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not up to speed.
Okay.
Your role in the COCO disciplinary committee.
What role did you play then? You'll recall, Honorable Terry, that the appointed class decker who appointed Gonki. So I was interviewed by Gonki in terms of the allegations that were raised. And when I went to the interview with Gonki, Gonki gave me this report that you just referred to. This report. They asked me, do you know this report? And I must say that I told them that I don't know the report, but I'm familiar with the content. Because at the time I also was a bit suspicious that who am I talking to, which I also told them as well, to say I feel that maybe you guys are conflicted through LifeTech.
So you're not called the DC in your capacity as a general manager, or just one of the people who happened to be having information that can assist the disciplinary committee to deal with this place. I'm just interested in the role.
Yes, the investigators, they wanted me to help them take them through what I know in the report, which was the whistleblower report.
Okay. Other question, sir?
Thank you, Honorable Sedi. Honorable Mare is gone. Honorable Noban.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Masango, you said you were... Okay, you were seconded to Mr. Koko's office. Was this before or after your contestation for the CE post? Your secondment to his office? Was it before the contestation or after?
It was during that time, because at that time, the issue of sending me to Harvard and taken to Gogo's office, it was during that time when we went for the interviews and we were waiting for feedback.
Okay. What was the role of General Rakau and General Matthew? What were their specific roles?
General Rakau is responsible for the security. He was brought by Brian to help on the security. General Rakau was more of helping liaising with the work that we wanted to do with some of the African countries.
And Martins?
That's General Martins, who was doing more liaising and strategy in terms of the work that we wanted to do with our neighboring countries and other countries abroad. And then General Rakau was solely responsible for security.
Okay. The date for Melrose Arc, what was the actual date?
In my tracking back the sequence of events, the 11th of March, which was Wednesday, when I go back to the calendar, I could point to that date, the 11th.
11 March 2017.
No, 11 March 2015.
2015. Okay, I think I misheard him. After all these things that were happening to you, with the threats and all, did you at any point think it would be best for you not to keep them to yourself, but to also report to the police, whether it's the police or whoever, besides Ms. Cry? Did at any point that come?
No. No, except those, but in terms of the threat and victimization, it's always difficult because, you know, they will want more information. For example, if a car come and stopped you and push you aside, you can't have the registration. When you go to the police, what will they say? what information will you give them? It's always difficult. But until you've got like something tangible that you can say, this is a registration, or this is a photo of the person that was taking us photos, here is it, I don't know what is he looking for, it's always difficult to, you know, to report it.
Can you take us through to 5.8, page 9, where you're saying Mr. Koko was attempting to sabotage your position? Can you take us through that?
That's the observation that I've made at the time, because 2016, when we were about to synchronize the first unit at Usile, he refused for us to synchronize it. He says we must synchronize it and let it stay on load, which is not the norm. When you synchronize the first machine, it trips, it does a lot of things, you test it until it's perfect. He says don't synchronize it.
And at the time I had a team working 24 hours on the machine. Us stopping not synchronizing the machine, December 2016,
the next opportunity was going to be March 2017 because people will go on holidays and all that. So from that point of view, in actual fact, I went against his instruction. I told the guys that will synchronize that machine. Because the quicker you synchronize the machine, the more you save, the more you remove the contractors from the units. So us chasing the cost savings, it was the right thing to do. And at Ingula, Unit 3, the unit that that got damaged, we also wanted to put it into commercial operation. As well, first I told Brian, I said, Brian, your Christmas present will be us, you know, putting Unit 3 of Ingula into commercial operation. He refused for us to put Ingula 3 into commercial operation, which was very strange. And I asked him, when then we should put this unit? He says, we'll put it in January. I said, when January? He says, the 8th of January. I went on leave, I came back on the 9th, and the unit is not put into commercial operation. And I must say that I jumped on the table, I told him that I'm removing all the contractors at Ingula without putting that unit into commercial operation, because I'll save, out of that 28 billion on that project, I'll have some savings. Because the more you keep the contractors on site, the more you pay. Then eventually, in actual fact, he said, no, let's do it in April. I didn't see any reason why we should do it in April. So at the back of my mind, when all these things are happening, I couldn't understand, because everyone wanted us to finish this project because they are costing us a lot of money. And it crossed my mind, Honorable Novana, that maybe here there's something that I don't understand.
Honorable Nobanda.
My apology, Honorable Nobanda.
Thank you, Chair. With these contractors, that if you are saying if the more you kept the machine off, the more the contractors kept on. Do you perhaps know any of them, those contractors?
Yes, I know all of them because I'm managing the projects. We sign contracts with them.
Okay, do you, maybe I should have asked Uguti, do you know if these contractors have any relationships with Mr. Koko? Because if you were to keep something on benefiting contractors, it means you are making way for those contractors to have money.
Yeah, I don't have any knowledge of that.
Do you know of, are you aware of any investigations that are being conducted on you by ESCOM, apart from your suspension?
Yes, I'm aware.
Page 14, bullet 6.12. When you were reading here, there are other two names that you mentioned that are not on what we are having in front of us. Can you please repeat 6.12?
Yes. You will recall on 6.12 during the caucus hearing, his lawyers produced that affidavit, and in that affidavit, which my lawyers got, it had four names: Mr. Mziliga Ziwa Africa, Mr. Franz Takudi, Mr. Peter Sevula, and Colin Maile. Colin.
This Colin Maile, is it the same Colin that we know as the ANC Youth League president?
I also thought like that, but I can't confirm that.
Okay.
There was a name by the name of Colin Maile.
Thank you, Chair. That's all.
why are you defending this, Honorable Tseji? Because the person who has to respond to this is Mr. Masango, who actually talked about... That was my first question, that I heard these names and it ran into my mind that Colin Maile is the president of the Youth League. What has Colin Maile to do with ESCOM and affidavits of ESCOM? So that was my first question that I was going to ask. Why are you defending it? But thank you. What are you doing? Don't answer. The witness will answer. Next time, don't, Mr. Mare, it's your turn.
Confusion about names. Thank you, Chair. I will really be short. Sorry I couldn't be here on that point when I was asked. I want to ask first, as you know, to be a project manager, it's a very, very important position when you're running projects. Did you experience while you've been there in that position that there was interference from any of the, and there's more than one in your period, CEOs, as far as procurement and tender processes is concerned?
I'm not aware of any interferences because we remember we started all these projects during Brian Dame's time, and our process, the way it operates, we in the projects, we appoint our own technical teams, the teams that will evaluate, and then we go to the higher committee level and then we go present. But I was not personally approached or personally observed that there's any interferences in these projects, except one that was concerning me, which I could not prove. That was Duva 3. Duva 3, I was concerned, and when you were out, I explained that I've asked three reports, because normally before you sign the submission, you've got assurance and forensic, audit firm, legal, to give you the report that says this process was clean. Once you clear that, then you can go and read the submission and sign the submission. So I was removed before the finalization of the... That was the only one, because I never had an opportunity to read this report and to confirm that two or three process, from the procurement process point of view, it was fair, transparent, and clean. That was the only one I felt that I need to intensively... Yeah, because now, moving from number one and number two to number six, it was questionable, but I left the process. I got removed before that could be concluded.
Now, the chairman of any board, in this case now the ESCOM board, play a major role, and you actually submitted to him a report. How did you experience Dr. Ben Nugani? I always pronounce it wrongly. How did you experience him and your interaction with him and the report you've given to me, because there should be a conversation along the line?
I must say that I believed in Dr. Ngubane. When I explained to him what was going on, he was very, very upset. He got very, very upset. I could see that he was very upset. He said, can you go and write down these things that you are telling me? And that's the reason I went and write and give it to him. And that's why I also believe that he did attempt to take necessary action.
When you attended the meeting at Melrose, that's not the Melrose place or Melrose, the cheese spread, but Melrose. Do you think there was an underlying message given to you when you were there for the 10 minutes that you said?
Can you please repeat it?
When you visited that meeting at Melrose, would you say there was an underlying message that was conveyed to you in that 10-minute meeting?
At the time, no. But as things unfolded, you could, go back to say, you know what, there's a lot of things.
Thank you, Honorable Mare. Honorable Muganga Kavash.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Masango, I can see that you have grown through and developed by ESCOM, like your boss, your former boss, Mr. Koko, with an experience of 20 years, started as a technician, project director, and a group executive. So really, you know the ins and outs of ESCOM. According to your knowledge, because you as a project manager, and even the senior one, you were dealing with procurement. Can you give me a breakdown of the procurement process at ESCOM? Maybe before that, shall I say, when is the procurement or supply chain branch is located in ESCOM? Is it under a particular division, under a CFO, or is just a standalone division or a branch?
Thank you, Chair. At the moment, the procurement department is reporting to the CFO. But at some stage prior to this current arrangement, it was combined with the engineering, we used to call it technology. It was procurement and technology led by Marcella Koko at the time, reporting to Dan. But as we speak now, it falls under CFO.
So in other words, when Mr. Singh, when he was the CFO, the procurement department was under him?
Correct, Honorable Kawas.
Okay, no, I'm getting clearer now. I did ask a question when Mr. Singh was here with certain procurement processes, and the answer was that those processes were not dealt with at his office. And I specifically asked that, but these processes must be under the CFO, and those were denied, but that's for another day. And then can you just break down the procurement outlining the first step. As a project manager, you put together a submission. That submission, the first committee that you submit to.
Okay. Through you, Chair. Let me unpack it like this. You've got what we call board tender committee. The board tender committee presides over any submission that is above 750 million, anything at 750 million and above, it approves it. Then you've got what we call ESCOM, where the executives of ESCOM, they are appointed as members of the committee, we call it ESCOM, they preside over anything that is below 750 million. Then you've got divisional tender committees that preside on anything that is like below, recently they made it, I think, plus minus 400 million, I stand to be corrected. that's the threshold. Then you've got the lower one that goes to 100. It just gets appointed. And in different business units, like the power station or the project, you also have a committee that presides over any tender or submission that is below 50 million, something like that. Now, the way it works, let me talk about the board tender committee. Anything that goes to the board tender committee, the members at the board tender committee are the board members. All right? But any submission that goes to the board tender committee, it starts at the ex-cops, where the ex-co members are sitting, are appointed. Then they recommend it to the board tender committee, then it goes to the board tender committee, where the board members are presiding. Then any other tender, if let's say it's 12 million, it will go to a committee that is relevant for that threshold. Now, what we normally do before, in most of the instances in project, if there's a work that needs to be procured, we start write a strategy first, present it to the relevant committee in that hierarchy, and then they approve it. Then you come back, you go to the open tender market. Sometimes you can recommend a sole source. Then you go to the market, then you evaluate. Now in the evaluation is very critical, because you've got the technical evaluation team, safety evaluation team, quality, finance, and procurement. When the tender comes in, they separate it and evaluate it, then consolidate. And then after consolidate, they'll come back and say, okay, we've evaluated the 17 companies that tendered. This is number one, this is number two, and then they make a recommendation. Then it goes to the relevant committee.
I just want you to confirm to me, in a board tender committee, the board is compromised of board members, including certain executives, your CEO and the CFO. Do they sit in that board tender committee as well, the CEO and the CFO?
Yes, you 100% correct. It comprises of them, but they don't. They don't sit in the.
In a tender committee, they sit in the ESCO one. They sit in the ESCO one.
Even on the ESCO one, in terms of my knowledge, the CFO and the CEO were not sitting.
Okay.
Only those that the CEO has appointed to sit there.
That's correct. I don't want confirmation. Can you outline this committee? I understand when you say go to technical for evaluation, but what I'm looking for you to, according to the supply chain management act and procurement policies, I'm expecting to get, do you have a bid evaluation committee, a bid spec committee? I'm looking for those names that are legally put in an act. We have committees that are structured and are named as this is a bid evaluation committee, this is a bid spec committee, specification committee, this and this, even if they are under executive. In fact, the under executive one, that's what I'm looking for.
I think I understand, Honorable Tabash, what you're saying. It's a matter of terminology, but in ESCOM practices, engineering, they prepare a scope. They have a scope of work, they have a sign-off. And then once they have a sign-off to say this is the scope of work, then they hand it over to the procurement, because the procurement process belongs to procurement division, to procurement department. They prepare a scope, sign it off, give it to the procurement, and then procurement people put it in their document, send it out. And then when it comes back, and then the technical evaluation is evaluated by engineering people with the engineering expertise. They compile their own report that forms part of the total submission report. And safety does that, finance does that, and then procurement then consolidate and come up with one report.
At which stage do you advertise a tender? when it's an open tender?
We advertise once we have presented a strategy to the relevant committee to say this is our strategy. We go, for example, open tender, and then it's very detailed strategy, and then the committee will approve, and then the procurement people then take it out to the market.
You talk about the lowest tender amount of for like 400 million that you don't have to, or the others 100 million that they just get appointed. You never mentioned the quotation. You don't advertise on for quotations, even on the, if it's not on the publications like newspapers or in any board or tender board in your offices, if you call it whatever, on a notice board and put those on the website. You just appoint.
My apology if it didn't come out like that. It's the same process. If the strategy says go out on open tender, even if it's 100 rand, you will go out on open tender, Eskom bulletin, advertise, and you also mention the strategy, how you're going to advertise and all that. If it's a sole source, then you will recommend to the committee to say, this is a guy that has got the IP, is the only guy. You justify it, and then the committee then approve that, then you can go to that. But the process across the hierarchy is the same.
Explain us this sole source, because I'll tell you why. We're seated with a problem of a coal supply that there has never been on an open tender for 40 years. So explain us the sole source. How do you identify the sole source?
We normally do the sole source if we only know that this product or this service is only supplied by this one company. In other words, even if you test the market, because in the process there's that opportunity where you request for information. If you go out to the market to request for information, you've got only one supplier that can do that work. There's no one else. Then you prepare that document to go to the committee, say, committee, I'm asking a sole source. This is the only company that we have that can provide this type of service or this type of product. Therefore, can you grant me a mandate to go and negotiate with them?
So you get a mandate to negotiate. Okay, let's come to your page 7 on the 5.51 that deal with the issues that Mr. Koko instructed you to, or directed you, instructed you to perform. One of those was the instruction that you remove the consultant project manager. How was that project consultant then was procured?
This one was a bit different. What Eskom did, Eskom went out on an open tender, and then on that open tender they appointed panels, different companies, all right? And then those different companies were appointed, but not to do the work, but appointed, qualified, available to procure certain type of, to execute certain type of services. Now, when we want the service to be procured, in other words, it's more like of shortlisting of all the companies that are capable. And then when we want to procure, then the team or different projects will then prepare a submission and take it to the committee to say, these are the panels that you've given us from head office. We want to procure this service from this company. And those services were spread evenly in these panels. And now this guy was working for one of the company that was on that list.
What was the name of the company? What is the name of the company?
It was Tata. This guy was working for Tata.
Tata, T-A-T-A?
Yeah, Tata. And Tata was providing...
Okay.
project management services. Yes.
Okay. And what was the reason? Because you can't just terminate a consultant without any reason. You are saying the reasons were not removed, and which was suspicious. But what was the reason given for you to? I remember the other member said that this the project that you involved. Some of the reasons they were given is that the project was behind time.
I was when we discussed this matter, I was never provided with the reason, and that's the reason I was hesitant to act without the reason. Though at the end I did call the guys, I say let's remove them and see, and do our own investigation to understand why is he removing these people.
What were the terms of reference when this consultant was appointed? What was the duration of the service, of their service?
I can't remember the duration right now, but you're 100% right. Normally when you appoint them, you put a duration in the contract. So this one, this particular individual was removed before the duration lapsed.
So it can't be linked to a project being behind time?
No. In actual fact, if my recollection is correct, one of the reasons that we brought these Tata guys, you remember in India, there was a similar project that was built, but it was having four units. And all the time when people were criticizing us, they were referring to it to say it was built in a 48 months, in a 36 months. And Tata was in the panels. As much as we had other international panels as well, we also then started to source some of their services so that if they managed to build it faster, why can't we do it? And it came as a result of that to try and fast track the delivery of the projects.
What was the duration of the project grant that was on the contract? The starting, the commencement of the project and the ending of the project. Was it a 3-year, 1-year, 5 years?
Look, we had so many times since there was a public outcry. But when we started this project, we were told that between 48 months and 56 months, you can be able to build a project like Gusii.
And as we started to do the comparison, because we did not make that time, we realized that it takes 9 to 10 years to build a project of Gusii magnitude.
But the difference was that us Eskom took 1 year to plan. Other companies overseas, they took like 4-5 years to plan, and then they built in 4 years. Now, if you look at Medupi, we plan Medupi in a year, and then we build it in 8 years. So, and then that's why it becomes a bit costly, because your planning is insufficient. So the biggest mistake that Eskom has done in this big project was not to spend enough time to do the planning. So if I compare the duration with a project of the same magnitude, the duration eventually is the same. It's just the phases, the planning phase, the manufacturing phase, the construction phase, the commissioning phase. That's what eventually differs.
So would you say that the lifespan of the project was projected as for 36 months, which is 3 years, but it can overlap to 5 years? Would you share the same understanding?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the understanding was that it will take us 48 months to 56 months to build a project of Medupi magnitude.
That is 4 years to 5 years.
Yes, it's 4 years to 5 years.
5 years.
But upon the execution, we realized that those dates are not achievable. Then we started to go back and research.
Fine. Yes, but it took you how long?
It took us more or less roughly 9 years. All the first units started to come in 9 years, and then you've got the 6 month intervals.
Does that include your planning stage?
Yes, it does.
And you're saying you said, you are saying it takes you to up to 3 years or 2 years to plan.
So do it probably you need 3 to 5 years to plan.
Planning only?
Yes, because remember, the planning, it includes the designs.
No, I understand all of that.
Yeah.
But 3 years, 5 years.
Yes.
No, that's fine. But I have a problem with that, but don't talk. Next line talks about that you were supposed, you were asked to terminate the services of a subcontractor or, by the name of GTC company. My question is, and they were without any reason, again, any reasons given. There is no subcontractor that just work in a project. Where was the main contractor that this subcontractor was contracted to?
This subcontractor, GTC, was subcontracted to Tata. It was subcontracted to Tata. And as I explained earlier on, after this thing has happened, I did call Tata and said, this is the situation that we are faced, this is the instruction that I'm executing, but we will have to investigate us as ESCOM to get the details.
So Tata was given two types of contracts, built in one contract. Tata is a project management consultant, and also Tata is providing services of being a main contractor, and then being a main contractor also brings in subcontractors all in one. Does project management, does the actual construction. Is that what you are saying?
Yes, unfortunately that's a setup. What you will see in these projects is that you will find that the main contractor is providing the design, the manufacturing, the construction, the commissioning of a certain system or components. Within that, then they've got subcontractors who are doing it.
Hi, Chair. Yeah, when I was beginning to enjoy this, I really, 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 this is a problem. Because you can't be a project manager giving a tender to project manage a project, and then at the same time you construct. That's where the problem was with human settlement for many years, because you do everything and it's very difficult to deal with such a contract in terms of putting them on term, in terms of, because if you have a project management contract, a consultant, it's a different company. Then you go on tender, you procure services for the construction in a project. Then you deal with that contractor. Then that main contractor is the one that is procured to deal with the construction. That brings in the subcontractors. Now that's why we're having a problem with ESCOM. We'll pack that. We'll deal with it when we deal with ESCOM as a company and the department that are public enterprises, not in an inquiry. But having said that, also want to check.
Chair, if I may, I need to correct it. What you've just explained is exactly like that. We, ESCOM, we've got a contract with the main contractor. That's the person that we hold accountable.
That's my question.
And
why the ESCOM will say to their officials, like yourself, terminate, because you have no power to terminate a subcontractor. If there's something wrong, the contractor that is accountable, that has a contract agreement with you, that is contracted with the client, as ESCOM is the client, and the agreement is with the main contractor, it should have been the main contractor that was being terminated or whatever, or if they are putting on terms first and they are cautioned that they must get the problem is with their subcontractor, they must deal with their subcontractor and bring in new subcontractor. Why that this action was, there's something fishy here. You because you have no right to deal with the subcontractor.
We are in the same page, and that's why this created that friction that I have. But I think
your analysis is 100% spot on.
And the construction manager, are they in-source or outsource, the construction management people in ESCOM? Or they come with the main contractor, or they are in-source?
They come with the main contractor, but we also have our own construction managers to oversee what the contractors, construction managers are doing.
Oh, Mr. Vetebe, when he was still, Dr. Ngubane was the chairperson, as you gave him your whistleblower report, and you said something about Mrs. Vetebe, who influenced some people or was influenced by the chairperson people and told Mr. Ngubane that that report must not fly, or you must be suspended. I can't remember what you said. But my point is, what was the position of Mr. Zetembe at that time during your submission of that report and your suspension?
Mr. Zetembe was a board member, and he was also the chairperson of the board tender committee.
The last question, chairperson, is that in the middle of your submission here, you said that you wrote another letter to a new board. Now, and you subsequently received a letter, although you did not indicate whether it comes from the board or it comes from the acting CEO. Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to, Mr. Masango, to get a clarity, if practical possible, from his lawyer through a note or what, whether the letter that you have received, is it still confirming your suspension, or is calling you for 2ADC, or is reinstating you back to your position? It will assist us. If you can give that those seconds to consult Chair.
Yeah, Chair, what we'll do is that, like I said, I was told this morning, I haven't considered it. Once we've got all the information, I'll ask the lawyer to send it to the chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think that is, that would be the way to go. Give us the relevant letter so that we see, is it coming really from the board, from the new board of ESCOM, or is it coming from the, there are people at ESCOM that are still, there are people that who are former members or former executive at ESCOM who still thinks they are working at ESCOM. But it remains in your mind that there are those people that are into. On what Honorable Mkana Kabashe was asking on the issues of procurement and how the main contractor and the other subcontractors are working, I think, Honorable Kabashe, we will need to look at, we said before, we need to check the policies of ESCOM. Some of the policies of ESCOM makes us to wonder if they are really they interlink with the policies of government, or those things are just things that came out of them of their own mind, and they did not look at any government policies or any legal documents of government on how to contract people in a big company like ESCOM or in an SOE like ESCOM. So I think we need to check on those issues of ESCOM. But my question, or I wonder, why is Mr. Rakau and Martins, why are they called generals but they are working at ESCOM and they are not working at DINEL? Is because UDINEL works with generals and something to do with with force. Why are they called generals? Can you explain that?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. These Chair are retired generals from SANDF. So they still have that title.
Oh, the title does not end. Okay, it's a life title. All right, I was shocked when I heard of generals, and I was worried about the workers. Sorry? Yes. Now I understand. I thought it's just managers that have been given titles of being generals. Honorable members, thank you very much for your contribution in this inquiry, as usual. Thank you very much, Mr. Masango, for availing yourself to give us this information. This is very critical. But what you must know, in what you have given us, there are allegations that you made against people, prominent people in ESCOM, and those allegations will need to be investigated further by relevant bodies. We will be, if we are asked to give the information, we will give the information to the relevant bodies so that they take it up, and maybe they will conduct you and speak to you about the allegations that you have made. And thank you very much for the information that we have never got before, that we have now in our disposal. But also, members, we have a 15 minutes meeting that we need to have. But before that 15 minutes, there is refreshment outside that you can get. And after 15 minutes of the refreshments, we come back and we engage. Can the media be excused when we have done 15 minutes?